Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. And it's a really wonderful place, this country, because you can go out, you can tell the truth, you can expose scumbaggery, and guess what happens? People threaten to sue you for defamation. Yeah, that's right. If you're exposing corruption, oh, it's a crime to accuse somebody of the truth. Gotta love this country, man. It's so third world, you know. It's almost like I feel like I'm gonna go to the bathroom in a bucket one of these days, you know. It's that bad. Or at least if you did any analysis of the media and how freaking pathetic they are, that would be the case. Now, considering that you do really have to look at the media in quite a serious light, criticize them when they fail, and give them props when they exceed, that's the reason why we've got my very special guest today here, the illustrious, the fabulous, and the various other nice adjectives, Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and the USIndependent.com. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure and honor and what have you, and you probably give me a hell of a lot more credibility than I can get on my own. Now, we have a story to tell about the Ukraine. And when I say we, I mean you, because I don't know nothing about it. Not yet.
Well, I think it's very important. Recently, there was a video put out, a very beautiful young woman. Camera shots were all great. The editing was fabulous. It was very poignant. And it spoke to people's hearts. And see, that's how these situations begin and progress. And that's what I want to discuss today. I want to discuss the marketing behind the manufactured revolutions, because I don't think that people are aware that this is a product. This is how insidious these people are. Okay, we're dealing with CEOs. We're dealing with corporate heads, governments, state, multinational corporations, venture capitalists, investors, all the people who showed up at the World Economic Forum. We're talking about CEOs and investors. And so they have a product. Now, most of us think of a product as something that's physical, and there's a reason for that. It's because if you're not paying attention to the products that are non-physical, and you're thinking product, a physical object, then you're more likely to fall for the products that are ideas. And I want to give you an example. An idea whose time has come. It sounds real catchy. Does it, Vinny? It sounds great, right? An idea whose time has come.
Allegedly.
It sounds like a slogan, doesn't it?
I've heard it many, many times. In fact, I've heard it out Zeitgeist, in fact. That's what it reminds me of.
I just saw it recently on social media. Someone was passing along a meme. An idea whose time has come. What idea? Whose idea? Is it the idea that I remembered I lost my keys? Is it the idea that I want to celebrate my daughter's birthday on Saturday, even though it's on Tuesday? Is it the idea that I need to change my tire? Is it the idea of what we're going to have for dinner? What idea are we talking about? See, the reason why this comes out, this slogan, an idea whose time has come, the reason why it comes out is because we put our emotional idea of what the idea is in front of that. We finish their sentence for them. And so when we do that, an idea whose time has come becomes personal. And if anyone were to attack that idea whose time has come, then they would be attacking us personally. And they're attacking our right to exist. And of course we have a right to exist. We're here, aren't we? So we have this dilemma of marketing that we're falling under. And let me go back to that video that I mentioned. I watched it. It was very poignant. It touched my heart. I saw that it was very well produced. I saw that it was directed in a specific way. But it did not talk about the reason why Venezuela erupts. No one's talking about that. Ukraine erupts. Everyone's talking about that. They're not talking about the reason why. The reason why is why you're being marketed to. And the marketing has multifaceted effects. But Vinny, I don't want to take up, I don't want to railroad your show.
You do realize we have 3 hours and you can take up as much time as you want, because that's kind of what my show is about, is making sure the guest, it's almost like, yeah, pretend for a moment that it's your show, but you have some kind of slave here to, you know, work the board and what have you. You know, that's kind of how it works.
Okay. Let's talk about marketing, folks. Everything is marketing and investing. Everything is marketing and investing. Everything is marketing and investing. The reason why is because it works. It's how the world goes round. When those gentlemen showed up at the World Economic Forum and they sat down, you had a room filled with people who were pitching an idea and people who would possibly be investing in that pitch. I watched a small couple of minutes of video with Bill Gates standing on stage speaking at the World Economic Forum. And he said, I can end poverty by 2035 if we get rid of people in impoverished countries. And one way that they could accomplish that
let me just get this straight. I'm going to end poverty by wiping out the poor. I guess that's one way to go about it. it'll be effective.
It is effective. See, folks, and I'm going to get into this as we go along, but we don't speak their language, and it puts us at a disadvantage. And what we understand about them is topical. And there's a reason for that, and I'm going to go into it, because it's all marketing and investing, folks. That's all it is. They market to you, you invest in their product. They make a return. They market to you, you invest in their product. They make a return, okay? It's marketing and investing. Everything is marketing and investing because we're dealing with CEOs, because that's how the world goes round. They market a product to you and you buy it, thereby investing in the product. And buying it means that you either hand over your fiat currency in exchange for a good or service, or you become part of the brand and you assimilate that idea and that concept into your own personal paradigm. It's a product. Either way, you've purchased it. So you've invested in their product. Now they've made a return. Now with the Ukraine, this seems to be their MO. And it's been going on since the early 1990s with Optor in Serbia. Now, this group was using a book. The book is From Dictatorship to Democracy, 198 Ways to topple your government using nonviolent resistance. And this book, written in the 1970s, has now become the blueprint since it was used in Serbia. And when the Optor movement used it, they were effective, and they caught the attention of the International Republican Institute. Now, Senator John McCain is on their board of directors, if that gives you a hint about who they are. And so they sent representatives in and got into the inner core of Optor, because remember, you might have heard this before, Optor was a nameless, faceless, leaderless group. Well, they did have a leader. They did have an inner circle. They did something very, very sneaky. They watched. They observed. They took notes. They didn't interact other than to ask questions about, why did you choose this tactic? Why did you choose this formation? Let me give you some of the tactics that they used, Optor used. They would bang pots and pans and march through the streets during the news broadcasts when the nightly news was on, so everyone would hear it. They would hand flowers to the police officers who would stand in their way at the beginning of the protest. And they strategically placed women, elderly, and children in front of the group that was protesting because they knew that police officers, now I know times have changed, but at the time they knew psychologically police officers were less likely to hit an elderly person, a child, or a woman. They turned mirrors on to the police officers that were standing in the way of the protesters to show the police officers what they looked like. They had the fist as their icon. Why? Because the fist represents power. And when you're speaking to a group who feel disenfranchised, and for really good reason, their homes are taken away, their jobs are taken away, their ability to pay for anything is taken away, not only from the fact that they lost their job, but their purchasing power is diminished. They feel utterly powerless. So you put a sign in front of them with a fist, and you tell them, you're going to march down these streets and you're going to take your power back. And those people say, yes, because I don't have my power. And so I'm going to go take it back from those guys who took it. Now, who are those guys again? They are telling you who they are. They point to the right direction. They organize a crowd and they go marching down the street. It is the new foreign policy that the U.S. government has been using because it is the most effective scheme that they've ever discovered. And it is extremely important that we pay attention to the Ukraine because they are taking honest, good people. How do you get good people to do bad things? How do you get good people to vie for their own tyranny?
Problem, reaction, solution.
You market to them. These fake revolutions are a product. It's a product of a marketing scheme. It is set up through the Hegelian dialectic. And I know that we've heard these terms before, problem, reaction, solution. Let me give you an example of how quick the Hegelian dialectic works. I was at a friend's house and she had a magazine. It was one of these girly magazines and I haven't seen one in a long time. So I picked it up and I was looking through it and here was this full page ad. And I'm thinking this must be worth like $15,000 or some exorbitant amount of money because it was just bam, right in your face. And it's a picture of a chocolate bar. And I'm looking at this chocolate bar and then off to my right, I notice it says hungry with a question mark. And I'm looking at this chocolate bar, and I said, well, yeah, actually, I am. And I look down to the bottom left, and there's the emblem, and it says Snickers. And I said, oh, dear Lord, there's the Hegelian dialectic all in one shot. And if I wasn't paying attention, I would have answered the question yes, and I would have gotten in my car and go bought myself a Snickers. Now, I know the kind of garbage that is in that food, but I felt hungry. My stomach growled a little bit. Why? Because it speaks to a base, instinctual, deep, deep part of our psychological programming. It's base need for food. its base need for love, its base need for acceptance, its base need to defend your right to exist. Now, part of the pitch, when it comes to these fake revolutions, the logos, the catchphrases, the icons, the recruitment of the public, there's this little trick that salesmen use. And I don't know, Vinny, you used to be a telemarketer, so you might have come across this a little bit, but there's a little
I was a little bit different to most salesmen, in which case I was just so freaking genuine and such a nice guy that I got people to trust me within moments. It's actually kind of served me well as a radio show host.
Well, you're just a wonderful guy. So you're just that's probably why it didn't work out, because these people are sharks. But they do this little trick. They repeat to you how you feel. They listen to what you say, and they pick out the emotion behind the words. And they only address the emotion. Because psychologically, on an unconscious level, you will then become in accord with them. And so now you're more likely to agree with the next thing they say. And the next thing they say is part of their sales pitch. They go right back into the pitch. It's called looping. If you go off script and you start asking them questions that they're not prepared to answer, all they do is loop you back around. And so you're in the loop with them. And think of it as the infinity symbol on its side.
Oh my God. You know what this reminds me of? Talking to cops. You know, do you have weed on you? No, sir. Do you have weed on you? No, sir. Do you have weed on you? You know what? The fact that you keep asking me that exact same question means I should probably not give you the answer you want. So again, no, sir. That's
absolutely
the looping, isn't it?
That is. And what you did is brilliant, because if you're not participating, then they have no other choice than to keep reiterating their point. But your non-participation, your non-compliance in the loop keeps them. You are adversarial, and they are adversarial to you. The reason why you want to keep them in that state is because you retain your power. That's where your power is, in your non-compliance. That's why I've talked about non-compliance. It's not popular. There's a lot of groups out there who are saying, hey, I know you lost your home and you lost your job and your babies are hungry and your kids need new shoes and you really can't afford to buy them for them. Hey, we're organizing this protest. Grab your pitchfork and your fire and let's go storm Pennsylvania Avenue. And it speaks to you in your heart, in that base place that I was talking about. Because remember, the salesman does not speak to you, speaks to your emotions. Doesn't matter what you're saying. They're listening and picking out the most obvious emotion, and they're going to bring it back to you and loop it back, because as soon as they get you to agree that that's how you feel, they've got you. Once you are in accord with them, you will do what they say. Politicians do this. Salesmen do this. Bankers on Wall Street do this. Radio hosts do this. Celebrities do this. Public speakers do this. That is how they hypnotize you. That is how they get you to do bad things. Good people doing bad things, doing things that are detrimental to them. It's a loop. It's an infinity symbol on its side. And as long as you participate, then they have you. And that's why this, what's going on in the Ukraine, is so important. So I want to get back to Optor and the International Republican Institute, because what they learned from this movement, they took with them and they started replicating it all across the Middle East. And they had this brilliant scheme. They use the obviousness of the destruction that they've caused through economic terrorism and social terrorism. And the people are already beaten and they're looking for a savior. They're looking for someone to help them. And here comes along one person or one group who speaks to that and tells them what to do.
I know. This is actually why I am probably the least biggest fan of the Messiah complex. Nobody's going to save you. You know, that's my motto. Ain't nobody going to save you. And what happens is most people believe that they will have a savior. You know, it's like either Jesus will save you, or Muhammad will save you, or somebody equivalent in terms of religious power and fervor, like Barack H. Obama will save you. It's insane, because I think that the entire mentality behind a savior complex has been imposed on people to ensure that they do not try and save themselves from the scumbag who's telling them that I'm going to save you, when in actual fact he won't save you. He'll just do something that rhymes with it, like enslave you.
You want to know how they do it? See, we always hear about this. Everything that Vinny said is absolutely true. But I'm going to go a little bit further. I'm going to take you a little bit deeper, and I'm going to tell you how they do it. Because we have to know how they do it. That way we can choose consciously to stop complying. And if we stop complying, their whole system will fall apart. I promise you, it's true. You can't have a fight with someone who isn't fighting with you. You're just standing there fighting, and nobody else is there. Maybe a couple onlookers are laughing, but if you're standing there arguing with someone and they're not participating in the argument, or they've walked away or in the process of leaving, you are an idiot. We have to stop participating in our tyranny. And this is how they do it. Marketing. They know exactly how you feel. They're listening to everything that you say. They're reading all of your text messages and your emails. They have itemized receipts of everything that you purchase, so they know where you are. You're buying trendy jewelry with RFID chips, so they can follow you down the street. You've got a chip to pin a credit card in your wallet, so they can GPS locate you and watch your wallet walk down the street while you go shopping. They know you very well. They have, it's beyond Nielsen ratings. It's beyond the Gallup polls. They're monitoring every facet of your existence. They know what you want. And remember, we're talking about corporate CEOs. Now, corporations and corporate CEOs, rather, they know that if they give the public, or their customers, rather, what they want, the customers will do whatever they can to help that corporation out. So the corporation just has to figure out, what does the customer want? Well, we all want freedom, don't we? We all want our freedom of speech. We want our constitutional republic. We want our Second Amendment. We don't want to be subjected to police state and seizures of any nature. We don't want corrupt politicians in our government.
You could have fooled me, because the general public doesn't seem to follow that line of reasoning.
Here's where the spell of marketing comes in. The reason why nothing is changing is because we're not making conscious decisions. We're making decisions based on our emotion. We see a politician and he looks good and he's got soft eyes. And that hair is just right. And he smiles and he says what I want him to say. He says what I want to hear. It's like he's reading my mind. I love that man. Boom. I'm a customer for life. It's that easy. A little bit of makeup, a little bit of hairdressing, a little bit of practicing with a public speaker. A little bit of neuro-linguistic programming. Bam, you're a customer for life. It doesn't matter what they do. You ever wonder why all of a sudden a senator or a representative from the House or a president, they've done horrible, or a governor, you know, it doesn't matter. They've done horrible throughout their entire stint. And now when it's election time, they do this wonderful thing. It's because you will forget about all of the horrible things that they did. You will forgive them if you can't forget. Because whatever it is that they're doing right now to make up for it is going to touch you in an emotional way. And if you're unconscious, then you're going to react to that emotion.
You know, it's funny because me and my friend, we did a jam one time. We came up with a song called Scumbaggery. And the chorus goes something like, scumbaggery it came back with me. I went overseas and came back with it. And I will deceive and make you forget scumbaggery.
One of the things that salesmen do is that they disappear. It's just like a narrator. You go to a theater and the gentleman comes out in front of the curtain and he introduces everything and he's in a top hat and or something that will catch your eye, something that will allow you to feel comfortable with him and yet see him as a authoritative figure throughout the play. And he introduces it and then he steps back and the curtain's drawn and there you go, there's the show. His whole purpose is to get you into a hypnotic state so that you will take in all the information that you're just about to see. And that's what Bill O'Reilly's job is. Do you think Bill O'Reilly really thinks or feels that way?
Bill O'Reilly used to be a JFK conspiracy theorist. Did you know that?
He used to. Well, I remember when he was on Hard Copy, and that was a tabloid journalism show.
Huh.
Okay. Bill O'Reilly is an actor playing a part. The part that he's playing is this adversarial guy that you just hate. But you hate him so much you can't stop watching him. It's like a train wreck. And he gets great ratings and he's going to continue doing it. Howard Stern, same thing.
Isn't he the top rated show in America?
Yes. He appeals to all of the base needs that we have. Sex, food, and our right to exist.
He's the Snickers of journalism.
Listen, folks, everyone that you know, including yourself, is under the influence of one of four things at all times. Now, it could be a combination of any of them, but it's one of four things. Drugs, alcohol, rage, or fear. And if it's fear, you are easy to market to. That's why they keep us in fear. There might be a bomb on an airplane, the DHS said this past week. You got to look out for the bombs on the airplanes. We don't know. We got an alert, an anonymous source somewhere. You got to love those anonymous sources. Because at Fox News, when they say anonymous sources or some sources say, that's their cue that they're giving you their opinion.
Yeah, they're making stuff up.
They're making stuff up, except you don't know it because you don't think to yourself that the guy sitting in front of you in as a newscaster is actually a salesman pitching you a sales pitch. You wouldn't think of it that way because you think of sales as something different. But listen, folks. Everything is marketing and investing. These are corporate CEOs. And I was shocked. You know, I'll go back to Bill Gates at the World Economic Forum. I was shocked because I don't know about you, Vinny, but I always thought of Bill Gates because of the way that it's portrayed in media. And I mean all media in general. That he's this type of person that he would just make a phone call and something would happen. Do you get that feeling that he's got that much power?
Especially if the phone call was to the bank to say, hey, can I have like one of my billions just to give to this particular charity over there? Oh, yeah, sure, Mr. Gates. What does that charity do? Well, it gives toxic vaccines to those black people in Africa that I don't like and sterilizes them. All right, no problem, Mr. Gates. Coming right your way.
Exactly. But here's Bill Gates standing on stage asking these investors for money. Why would he be asking them for money? He's got all the money in the world. I mean, wouldn't he invest in his own project? Well, he is. He does. He puts up some of the money. But see, these guys realize that money makes everything happen. And so the more money you have and the more people you have involved, the bigger your project is going to be.
Not to mention he's Bill Gates, so he could make it all happen by himself. So if he says, I'm Bill Gates and I'm doing this, do it with me. You've got money too, don't you? And they go, yes, I do. Oh my God, I could work with Bill Gates. Wow, man, amazing. Where do I sign? How do I give away my life savings to destroy the earth? Please, Mr. Gates, give me a shot.
I just want the ability to waste my money on killing people, just like you. Thank you. Thank you.
Did I overreact?
You know, there is a necessity for some theatrics. I understand. What I'm saying is very, very intense. And so I appreciate your comic relief. But here we have Bill Gates asking for money from his friends. Maybe they've invested in what he's done before. Maybe they've never invested. He knows that they're pre-qualified because they're sitting in those seats. You can't have any less than maybe a couple of $1 billion sitting in a bank account somewhere. You have to be qualified to sit in those seats. So he knows he's going to get a return. Here he is on stage pitching his idea. Hey, ending poverty, 2035, let's invest in vaccines, let's go kill off the underdeveloped nations and the people who survive, we'll stick them in megacities. And oh, by the way, here's my good friend Al Gore, and he's going to explain to you how we can stop global warming by killing off people. So we're kind of in accord. And oh, there's our good friend Matt Damon sitting in the third row laughing it up with some of our friends. He was just all over Facebook telling everyone about civil disobedience. And here he is, our good friend Matt Damon. Isn't that funny? Let me talk about Matt Damon for a minute.
I can't hear anybody talk about Matt Damon without that phrase coming into my head. Those the Matt Stone and Trey Parker just ruined his life.
It is a great film if you get a chance. Team America: World Police. It is absolutely fabulous. Please watch the director's cut edition because it's got some extras. It's really incredible. And I never thought I would be interested in a movie with strictly marionettes, but it's definitely worth it. Matt Damon was all over social media as a new guru. He was reading from Howard Zinn, who has passed away. And Howard Zinn produced a book, The People's History of the United States of America. Great book. Read it. Matt Damon's reading from it about civil disobedience. And everybody jumped on the bandwagon. Why? Because the celebrity is saying what you want to hear, speaking to your heart, saying things that you're thinking. You don't feel so alone anymore. If Matt Damon is talking about it, you must not be crazy.
The name Russell Brand comes to mind as well.
Absolutely. The lead singer of Korn comes to mind. Let me give you guys a little hint. When you are accustomed to a certain lifestyle, and I'm not placing any value judgment on it, okay? We all are accustomed to the lifestyle that we live. If we weren't, we wouldn't be living that particular lifestyle. So it's up to you. You want a better lifestyle, you change it yourself. But the lead singer from Korn is accustomed to a certain lifestyle. And there is a lot of money being moved into alternative sources of media.
I've always found it ironic, the multimillionaires raving on about the plight of the poor. I was just like, I don't see how that works.
It doesn't, except it's a marketing tool. And let me explain this. And I'm going to pick on the lead singer of Korn just because he's the latest in a long line of anybody that you have seen who is an actor or an actress or belongs to some questionable charity group or any of these celebrities that you see in front of you. Trust me, this is all about marketing. Because there's so much money being moved into another source of media and all of those dollars are sitting there, it makes sense that someone who left their band and changed their entire life, became a Christian, would then need a new audience. Now, I have heard the song that he put out. I listened to it last night. It sounds exactly like old Korn. Korn before. I didn't mean anything derogatory.
Is it new Korn now? Is it GMO Korn?
I'm not sure. Well, here's the sales pitch. The guy's getting a little bit low in the pocket. And he sees that there's a group of people that if he just changes his MO just a little bit, changes the words of his songs just a little bit, adds in maybe a catchphrase like Illuminati, then he can speak to a whole new audience who have lots of money in their pocketbooks. And guess what? If he takes a chance, if he creates a consequence, and I'll explain what consequences are because they're not what you think. But if he takes that chance and he reinvents himself, then he could have an opportunity open up that would be lucrative for him. And guess what? He took a chance and he won. Jackpot, ching, ching, ching. House wins. You're going to go out and buy his album now. You're going to help him stay in the lifestyle that he's accustomed to. Is he speaking about 9/11 truth? Sure. Is he saying anything radical? Absolutely not. There's lots of things that people have said about 9/11 truth. People say that we need to have an open investigation. There are questions that still need to be answered about 9/11. Yes, that's an actual true statement. But that statement actually said nothing. That is one of those catchphrases, those logos that people say, the celebrities, they say them because they know that you're going to finish the sentence for them. And the people who do finish the sentence for them, those people are customers now.
May I postulate a theory here? New World Order knows that they're being exposed, and so they're recruiting celebrities to start talking truth, a kind of thing, just to divert people down tracks that don't matter so that they don't continue going on to the real truth and listening to the real commentators who are actually exposing the New World Order scumbaggery. Is that about right?
Well, it's close. You're sniffing around. You got to keep sniffing a little bit more. Because here's how sneaky this thing actually is. There is no such thing as bad press. Okay? When you are marketing a product, there is no such thing as bad press. Let me give you a case in point. There's a new movie out called The Wolf of Wall Street. Now, I watched this film with my husband, and I'm still disturbed by it. It's disturbing. It's about a gentleman who figured out that he could steal money from investors by upselling penny stock, and became a multimillionaire, drug addict, hedonist, and then ended up in prison. Not for the crimes that he committed, but for a lesser sentence because he ratted out his friends. Now, this is no one to look up to. But there was one point in the movie that, man, it really hit me hard. He was all excited because he was about to get a woman, a journalist from Forbes magazine, come into his office, and he had everything set up just perfectly. And he told all of his salesmen on the sales floor, keep everything clean. When the woman showed up, he took her around everywhere, showed her every nook and cranny of the office, sat for photo ops. He was so excited. And then the article came out in Forbes magazine, and it was a hit piece. And he went ballistic. He goes off on his wife. He's driving to work. He's talking to his other members of board of directors, and he's going off on them. He can't believe it. He almost crashes his car. He gets up the stairs and goes to the elevator, and the elevator opens up on the floor, and there is a mob of banking salesmen, junior brokers, who want to work for him. They saw the article, and he now has a mob of men who are willing to do whatever he wants because they believe that he is the one in the group that has succeeded the most. And again, I'm bringing you back to your base needs, your base emotions. We all have this innate need to survive. And as social creatures, we look to the most successful in our group as the answer. And I'll give you an example of this. Yesterday, I was watching some television with my son. I decided to put a movie, Caveman, with Ringo Starr and Shelley Long. It's an old film from when I was a kid. And these cavemen see this lizard. It's like a giant, it's like a claymation giant lizard, and he's going to eat the cavemen. Some of them climb trees. Some of them hide behind rocks. Some of them push the other guys who are in the tree out, and then they have to go find another tree, and everyone's scrambling. And then the lizard grabs a hold of this one guy's leg and drags him over and picks him up and takes him off. And they all come down out of the tree and from behind the rocks, and they realize their friend is gone. And they look at each other and make sure each other's okay, and then they turn around and start walking away. This is indicative of that base need to survive. Whatever that guy who became lunch for the lizard did, it didn't work because he's lunch for the lizard. What they did to survive and not be lunch for the lizard worked. So they're going to replicate that. And the leader of their group, the big guy who pushed everybody out of the tree and got to the top, they're going to mimic everything that he does because he is big and strong and he has the most beautiful woman waiting for him back at the cave. So whatever he's doing, it must be right because he's got all the good, all the spoils, all the best, and they want whatever he's got. And they're willing to be his entourage. They're willing to be his fans. They're willing to just support him from afar. However close they can get to him, they're willing to take it because it means more women, more food.
It's when funny because it occurs to me that we're still those cavemen. It's just the caves have like 7 rooms, electricity, underfloor heating and whatnot. And the women aren't wearing animal skins. Well, in some cases they are. But, yeah, and actually in most cases they're kind of not wearing hardly anything at all in terms of, like, when they're walking around in public. I don't know. In fact, what happened, right, is I think people forgot what their base principles are. They don't even know who they are as an animal, okay? As a human animal. They don't understand their animal instincts, and as a result of them not knowing what their animal instincts are and having other people who are powerful and wealthy and engaging in scumbaggery know what those animal instincts are, they manipulate them, right? Just to make sure that they can control you, not entirely dissimilar from how a caveman would club you over the head and drag you into a cave and rape you. You know, that's kind of it. They're raping us in our minds. They're skull fracking us.
Yes, absolutely. Because it's the path of least resistance. If they give you what you want, you will do whatever they say. If they tell you that if you join our group, you can fight for your freedom, then you will do whatever the group says because you know that whatever that is, that's going to help you get your freedom. No matter how ridiculous, no matter how it goes against what you know to be right or wrong, you will join the group because you want to survive. You don't want to be the caveman who got eaten for lunch by the lizard. You want to be as close as you can next to that big guy so you know that you're able to survive. And the other thing you're going to do is you're going to mimic everything that guy does. You're going to copy his hair, the way he dresses, the way he speaks. You're going to read the books that he reads. You're going to go to the websites he goes to, watch the movies. You're going to do everything. You're going to buy all the gossip columns, all those tabloid journalists that are writing these articles that are really just propaganda hit pieces, but who cares? It's sensational. We love sensation. It speaks to a base need. Everyone wants to be famous. That's why we have reality television. It saves them a lot of money, I'll have to say, because they don't have to pay the actors and they don't have to rent the studios.
I was on Clint Richardson's show, actually, The Corporation Nation, and he was working behind the scenes on those things, and he got a hold of the 24-hour cameras that they've got. They go to hotels, okay? like the shooting ends for the day, and they just go to their freaking hotel rooms, you know, the minibars and all of that kind of stuff. It's a total fraud.
It's absolute fraud. But everyone who posted those pictures of the guy from Duck Dynasty, you fell for it. It's not just that they were passing through the 2014 fiscal year for the NDAA while you were all, you know, oh my God, Duck Dynasty. But that whole thing was marketing because their ratings were falling. And these people, they were millionaires before they got on the show. They grew some beards. They're playing a part. They don't actually enjoy that. It's disgusting. But they do it because who cares? So you got to stand in some mud and you got to do some gross things. Who cares? You're making millions of dollars. They know that people want the American dream. That's what we're all fighting for. We're fighting, we call it fighting for liberty. We call it fighting for a constitutional republic. But what we're really fighting for is that American dream. To have a business, to have a home, that's comfortable, to be comfortable in our expenses, to not have to worry, to have enough. We're not fighting for a constitutional republic because we don't know what that is. I mean, we've heard the words put together before, and we've seen some pictures, and we've heard some topical explanations as to what that is. And so we think we know what it is, because the person who gave us that topical information was of authority. Let me give you an example of this. And I'm going to give you an example of the sales pitch in media, because this is very important. These people who are celebrities in media, they're salesmen. They're pitching you a product. Their product is them, because the people who paid money during the commercial breaks want a return. They want a return on the money that they invested. So that person is now a product. And here's how they keep themselves in business and keep you a lifetime customer. I was watching an interview with a gentleman who has been speaking about the markets for a very long time, and I'm not going to mention his name because I want you to understand the information. I don't want you to gravitate towards some idea in your mind about who it might be or what they might be about. It's not about that. I want you to listen to the pitch. This gentleman was talking about emerging markets and how Turkey's at one time getting an influx of millions and millions and millions of dollars to build up their infrastructure. And now their currency has been devalued by 20% and it's going to crash. And the markets are going up and down and up and down and up and down. And the dollar's going to crash. Look at the markets. It's going up and down and up and down. Listen, folks, remember I said we're all under the influence of four things: drugs, alcohol, rage, and fear. Let's go back to fear. When you look at something like the stock market in an isolated incident, like in one day, it's absolutely terrifying. It's like a roller coaster ride, up and down and up and down. And oh my God, is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Am I going to lose money? Am I going to gain money? And then the bell goes off and everyone goes silent and the last numbers come in and everybody's either cheering or they're praying. It's like a roller coaster. They found out in the early 1920s that they could build these machines, and they were shoddy in construction at the time. And let me tell you, every single time someone got on these things, they died. It wasn't just every day or every month. Every time someone got on, a group of people would get on these new roller coasters that were just coming out in the early 1920s. People died every time they rode them. Someone died. I can't say that enough. We still ride roller coasters. It came from a place and time where people wanted the thrill of dying without actually dying. And some people were able to grab a hold of that and survive. Others weren't. But they were willing to pay money for that thrill. And that's what it is on the stock market. Up and down, up and down, up and down. They're fearful. It's exhilarating and it's terrifying all at the same time. It's a roller coaster ride. These people are addicted. Gamblers are addicted. When a gambler loses, in his mind, it's not that he lost. It's that he nearly won. And if he tries again, he might nearly win again. And if he tries again, he might nearly win again. And do I have to keep repeating myself? So the stock market, when you look at it from an isolated incident from one day, it looks terrifying. And the design in the media to show you these isolated incidents one day at a time is the design of the marketing to keep people involved. Because the big guys who have the money, the really big guys, like the guys who invested in the emerging markets and gave Turkey its ability to build up its infrastructure, the same guys who have now pulled out. Do you know why they pull out? They pull out because it's more advantageous for them economically, monetarily, to do so. And as they're pulling out, the small-time investors are watching, the big guys. and they move over to where the big guys are and start pouring their money in there. And when the big guys drop that commodity and move over to the left, the small guys then follow along. And when the big guys drop that and move back over to the right, the small guys follow along because they think that the big guys know something that they don't. They think the big guys have an insider tip that they don't. They don't realize that the big guys are doing it on purpose. Another thing that people don't realize when they look at the markets every single day is that you cannot see a trend if you're looking at an isolated incident. In fact, you have to go back 6 months to a year at least to be able to see a trend, to be able to say, wow, this currency is actually degrading. It's being devalued. It's falling. And then you would compare that graph to another graph, to another graph, and then see 10, 20, 30 years where you can actually see the devaluation of a currency. But every single day, you can't see that. Every week, you can't see that. And the predictions, the reason why the predictions don't come true is because the prediction itself is inconsequential. Remember an idea whose time has come? Remember how they put out the logo and we finished their sentences for them? That's exactly what you're seeing right there. The prediction comes out and it captures that fear, that roller coaster thrill. And people make decisions based on those emotions. Remember? They're speaking to your base emotion. So they're getting you to make decisions based on how you feel. And those decisions are always the ones that we regret. Always. I hear a lot of talk about the revolution. I hear a lot of talk here domestically about an American spring. I don't hear much talk about the day after. The day after is not the sale. The sale is the revolution itself. We'll deal with that bridge when it comes to it. But that's the boring part. That's the reorganization. Ah, but if we look at the Arab Springs and we look at all of these fake revolutions, including if you want to go real time and look at what's going on in the Ukraine and what's happening in Venezuela, you see that they have things in place. They have stability operations that they put in place. This is DynCorp, Blackwater, mercenaries. They show up in that country and they stabilize the population. What does that mean? It means that they put a gun in those people's face and say, you will comply or you're not going to be alive anymore. Get it?
I've got a gun in my face. Suddenly I feel a lot more stable, you know?
Absolutely. Sure, officer. I'll do whatever you want. You just... Can I make you a coffee?
Sure. That sounds like fun.
Stability operations are installed, and then they can install their patsy. Now, again, guys, we got to expand our idea of products because we've been blindsided by the one guy patsy. You know, the Saddam Hussein and Castro over in Cuba. We've been suckered into thinking that a patsy is one guy. But these guys are smart, okay? They do focus groups. They study. They know exactly what you want. And they know that you don't trust one guy, but you'll trust a group of guys. So what they've been doing is installing transitional councils. Wow. I felt like George Bush Jr. for a minute. Transitional councils. The Syrian National Transitional Council. There is one. It is comprised of people that have been chosen by the Saudi Arabian government and the UN and the EU and the State Department under Hillary Clinton. And they are waiting to sit down as soon as Assad is completely removed. And these people have no intention of returning that country to its original glory. Look at Libya. Anybody remember Libya under Gaddafi? You've seen the pictures. I have. And then you see Libya now. And now they're doing these comparison shots in the Ukraine of Kiev before, Kiev after. And what they don't talk about is that there are factions already in there. And we're hearing snippets of it. We heard a snippet of a conversation that Victoria Nuland did not intend to go public, or so we're told. Remember, folks, this is marketing. And I should probably explain something at this point. A salesman, a public speaker, a well-trained celebrity or personality will only show weakness when it is advantageous to the pitch. If it's going to get you to buy, they'll cry. If it's going to get you to buy, they'll show you a picture of their dead child. Whatever it takes, they'll do it. And so we hear this information from Victoria Nuland, and we are angry. The U.S. has just admitted, inadvertently, quote unquote, that they are using diplomats, U.S. diplomats, to incite riots on behalf of the Ukrainian opposition. This is the IRI. This is how they do it. This is a much easier way to take over a country. And let me tell you about what's going on with the Ukraine. The Ukraine has a lot of natural gas and has a lot of petrol. And the Ukraine, which spills out into the Black Sea, has an area that is a major import-export area. It controls a lot of what goes in and out from Russia, from these pipelines, out to be exported for monetization. So if you're going to take over an area that really sticks it to Vladimir Putin, you're going to pick someplace like the Ukraine. We also saw last year, or maybe even 2012 now,
May I intervene here? How close is the Ukrainian border to, say, Syria?
Oh, this is much farther away.
It's not like on the border of the Black Sea or something like that to allow a disruption of the movement of Russian ships, perhaps, through the straits.
Well, see, this is an import-export of natural gas and petrol area. Syria is smack dab in the middle of a pipeline that is supposed to be built between Iraq, Iran, and Syria. It's called the Iraq-Iran-Syrian pipeline. And they are going to extract all of the natural gas from the fields in Iran, which it's plentiful. And they are going to push it through this pipeline out to the Mediterranean Sea and become a formidable supplier for European and Asian nations. Israel does not want that because they just discovered they have the Leviathan Basin, which is 200 years that they've guesstimated worth of natural gas. So they want to extract that and become the world's leader of export natural gas so that they can control all of our energy needs. Now, how can I say that? Well, in 2012, at a UN summit of climate change in Copenhagen, they decided that petrol is out. No more subsidies for oil companies. Petrol is out. Natural gas is cleaner, safer for the environment, safer for global climate change, or whatever they're calling it. I wish they would just call it climate engineering and just be done with it and get over it, but they're not ready to come clean yet. So this is all about a switch. Now, who is still running on oil? Who is dependent on oil? OPEC and the countries that make up OPEC, like Saudi Arabia. The reason why I'm picking on Saudi Arabia is because they have been funding terrorist factions trained by the CIA in Chechnya for a very long time. The Ukraine is a new prize. If they've got to move to natural gas and they're not going to get subsidies for oil anymore, then they need to control both commodities. Why both? Because if they control the supply of both, they control the demand of either. If they ever want to bring back petrol for some reason, change their mind, hey, like the Atkins diet, you know, the founder of the Atkins diet, he used to say meat and potatoes for years, and then all of a sudden carbohydrates and meat are bad and you got to do this, that, and the other. If one day it's natural gas, 2 weeks from now it's petrol, it doesn't matter. They've got control of the resources. That's what this is about. Okay, because if Bill Gates is standing at the World Economic Forum pitching his friends, asking for money, then it's not about money. It's about the representation behind the money, and that's power. You can't ever have enough power. Ask the people who are in power. It does something psychologically to their brain. It makes them all sparkly. And it takes a certain caliber, and I use that word lightly, of person to obtain that level of power. They genuinely think that they're doing the right thing because they think like a CEO. And we don't think like a CEO. So we don't understand when they speak how they could possibly... Bill Gates, for an example, let's pick on him again. Bill Gates will go into Pakistan and inoculate and be part of inoculation initiatives with Gavi that end up murdering 47,000 children. Not 4,700, 47,000 children. And he goes home and kisses his wife and his kids goodnight. And he thinks he did okay. Because to him, those people are taking up resources, and those resources are not being monetized correctly if they're being wasted on those people. So the less people there are, the more he has to monetize. That's how they're thinking. And it's sick. It's absolutely disgusting. I have two small children. It's sick, but that's how they think. And if we understand that, then we understand when they're pitching us, because that's where they're coming from. You know, Max Egan,
it's like that old saying, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing humanity he didn't exist. I think the greatest trick marketers ever pulled is convincing people that they're not being marketed to.
Exactly. An idea whose time has come. Okay. Yes, absolutely. An idea comes. If you think of something, technically that statement is true. What you attach to it emotionally is your own business. But if it's advantageous for them, then you're a lifetime customer. If you look at the Snickers ad in the magazine and go and buy the Snickers, then you're a lifetime customer. If you watched or participated in any way in that debacle with Duck Dynasty, then you are still a customer. And you know what? It's okay. Because they're speaking to our base need, our base emotions, our need to survive, our want to be famous. Everybody can be famous now. You can get on a reality show. They've got them in all sorts of shapes and sizes and plot lines. And you too can have your 15 minutes of fame. And that makes you feel good because it's an accomplishment. You have done what these guys that you look up to do every single day. It's like you're part of their world now. Now you're hooked. Now you're going to pay attention to everything your favorite actor or actress or musician does. You're going to wear their clothes. If they put out a brand, you're going to buy it. You're going to do everything they say. If they tell you not to text and drive, not that it's not a bad thing. You should be paying attention to the road. But when Tim McGraw comes out and tells his audience not to text and drive, that's marketing. When we look at Miley Cyrus and we say, oh God, and there's all this stuff going on around it, and there's all these swirling ideas of and theories and postulations about what's going on. Remember I said that they never show weakness unless it's advantageous to the pitch, to the sale? Nothing that we know about isn't something that they don't want us to know. Everything fits in. It's a puzzle piece. Everything marches toward a directed goal. If you step back and take your emotions out of it, you can see it step by step by step. Now, it's advantageous to some people to sensationalize what's going on in our world because it creates new markets, it creates new opportunities to earn money. And that's what these people are trying to do. They're trying to protect their lifestyle that they've become accustomed to. That in itself is not inherently wrong. How you get there is questionable. So when you look up at these celebrities and you do what they say and you regurgitate something that even it sounds so ridiculous. Let me give you an example of another example of the pitch in media. I was listening to a gentleman who, and I won't mention his name, was speaking about the banker suicides. And Vinny, did you hear about these?
Actually, somebody sent me a text message to tell me about all of these, but I didn't see no articles or anything like that. Apparently, somebody committed suicide by shooting him half a dozen times in the head with a nail gun on one side of his head and then half a dozen times on the other side of his head, and then it was ruled a suicide. You know,
yes,
you could think of more effective ways to kill yourself, and maybe if you're a qualified banker, you'd come up with something perhaps a little less, I don't know, obviously murder.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. It's sensational. It's an open-ended question. You can fill in the blank. A lot of people have filled in the blanks, and one person that I heard filling in the blanks, which I thought was very fascinating because I've seen this person speak a lot. You know, they have a television show and they have a radio show, and I had never heard them pitching the audience before. But then again, I wasn't aware of this information. So how could I? If they're constantly putting us in the spell of fight or flight, of rage, or telling us, you know, hey, it's okay, go ahead and have a beer or, you know, whatever other drug you want. They're giving you permission to take a breather from all of the fight and flight and all of the scare tactics that they're using, giving you permission to just relax for a minute before they start scaring the crap out of you again. I'd never heard the pitch in media until I sat down and listened to this person. And so I started to hear it more and more. And it was amazing to me, but this was the kicker, okay? This gentleman says, regarding the suicides, that there is no correlation to this at all. There's no connection to it at all. However, there have been questionable suicides of bankers recently. Well, right off the bat, the guy is telling you he's making this up. This is his opinion because there's no correlation. There's no tying what he's about to say to what he's going to then explain to you as if it's an authoritative figure, as if he's speaking from a place of authority. And so he goes on to talk about how in news reports, the 4 to 5 bankers had passed away under questionable circumstances. And then there were these other reports, which bumps the number up to 20. Well, there you go. Either it's tabloid journalism or it's not. Either it's true or it's not. You can't have it both ways. So there are credible reports that say only 4 to 5 bankers passed away. And then there are other reports which arbitrarily bump the number up to 20. By taking the incredible information and mixing it in with the evidentiary information, that lends credibility to the information that was not credible. Because in the mind of the listener, they attach the good information with the bad information in their mind. This is all happening in your mind because that's where you make your decisions. That's where the emotions flood your brain with all of the chemicals, and then you make a decision in your frontal lobe. The host of the show goes on to say that he has no idea if this is true. But he's racked his brain and he's come up with 2 options as to why the bankers killed themselves. One of them is that they're sick of working for Lloyd Blankfein. How close any of these bankers were to Lloyd Blankfein, I don't know. And no evidence of them being close to him, sitting next to him in a board meeting, or personally text messaging him while they were eating lunch, or hanging out with his wife and kids in Martha's Vineyard. No information about that. Just an assumption. Just an allegation. But because this person holds a semblance of authority that the audience has given him because he told them that he was an authority and they believed him, he can say whatever he wants. And that's how it works. Then the truth becomes inconsequential. And you know what the byproduct of that is? Poor decision making. We don't make good decisions. We make decisions based on how we feel. We make decisions based on bad information that was given to us to conjure a specific emotion.
You know, it's interesting because there was a guy asking me, what do you do once you find out about all this stuff? And I was like, well, it's like a 3 or 4 step process. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was like step one is just dealing with the fact that you know this stuff. Secondly is finding out how you can make a difference. And thirdly, it's actually making a difference. I think that's the 4 steps, you know. First of all, you learn the information, then learn how to deal with it, then learn to make a difference, then make a difference. Okay? And I think making a difference is the pinnacle anybody can achieve in their life, particularly if you're trying to save the world and humanity from scumbaggery.
Here's how you can make a difference. The next time you see a picture of a candy bar, acknowledge that you're hungry and go find something healthy to eat. And you can program your brain to every time you see that candy bar, you'll think of a carrot stick. That's not bad programming. It actually helps your body.
Indeed. I was explaining to somebody the other day how Alex Jones' wife quit smoking. And she put all like a week's worth of cigarette butts in a bowl or something like that. Maybe a jar with a resealable lid, and every time she felt like a cigarette, she'd go and she'd sniff the jar because it got a little bit of water in it as well, and it just reeks real bad. So what it did to her brain, and I think this, or at least this is what I think happens, is that your brain then negatively associates your cravings and destroys those cravings.
Your brain will create some synapse relationships with different areas of the brain if you use that often. If you don't, the relationship dies. So what they're constantly keeping us in is a state of relationship in our brain where we are using the same synapse and we are having the same emotions. New information conjure up the same emotions. That's why when you hear a song or when you smell a smell, bam, you are right back at summer camp, or you're right back sitting next to your first love, or you're right back sitting in your fourth grade classroom. It's uncanny how we can transcend this reality and actually feel like we're sitting right there in the past just by a smell or a sound. But this is how we are affected. That's why music is so effectual. That's why they play music in the background of all of your shows and all your movies. I always wished that life had a soundtrack. Wouldn't that be great? If life, it would at least warn you. You know, if you're in the water, you would hear that, dun-it, dun-it, dun-it. You would know to get out of the water.
That would actually be quite amusing, you know. Imagine what the soundtrack would be when you walk into like a political rally or something like that full of your political opponents, you know. It'd be like Limp Bizkit or something.
Well,
Mission Impossible theme or Break Stuff, one of those tracks, you know.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. About a year ago, I met this woman who used to do the jazz circuit in Seattle. And she was on cruise ships for a while, and she met a lot of great jazz musicians. And I got to meet a couple of them through her and have lunch. And I sat at a jam session, and they were playing jazz music. And I'll tell you, folks, I've never heard this music before in my life. This is not jazz. It isn't even that wacky Miles Davis stuff with Bitches Brew. And I've never understood that album. I've listened to it several times, at least 20 or 30 times, honestly, folks. And I just don't get it. It's too chaotic for me. But this music, this new jazz music that obviously is not new, it's just never been heard by the general public. Because when the powers that be in the music industry started noticing that people were going to jazz clubs before they were called jazz clubs, they sat down and listened to this music. And then they took it back with them. And they focus grouped the hell out of it. And they rebranded and repackaged and found some people to be the new spokespeople for this new brand of music. And then put it out there for the audience to listen to. And jazz music for some people is very jarring. They just don't agree with it, don't understand it. But it does resonate with a certain sect of people. And for their entire life, they are jazz fans. And they've got lifetime customers. The point of the story is, by the time you see it, or hear it, or taste it, or participate in it, it's not real. It's a manufactured version of it. And if we understand that, then we're going to take a look at what's happening in the Ukraine and see that this is foreign policy going on right now. And there are factions in there, the US and the EU and Russia, and the people are in the middle of it. And there are good, honest people. Good, honest people who want freedom, who are the fodder, and the good people who are doing bad things. Because they don't realize that they're participating in their own tyranny. They don't realize that there are stability operations the day after the revolution. They don't realize that there's a transitional council or an individual patsy like Mohamed Morsi over in Egypt. They don't see that right now because they are pumped up high on that adrenaline. They are looking for their savior and they are finding it in this movement. So the product that is being sold to us now is freedom. And it's the ultimate product because it has everything. It touches every single aspect of our life because it's the one thing that we've seen being taken from us. Now, who do we blame on this? Because in a storyline, there's always a good guy and a bad guy, even if the good guy is an anti-hero, you know, like in the Despicable Me movies, where he's obviously a bad guy, but you go ahead and root for him because he loves the children. So he can't be all bad. We take this mythology, you know, Joseph Campbell talked about the hero with 1,000 faces. We take this mythological idea, the fist, the pots and pans, the roses handed out to the police who are blocking the protesters, the image of this poor woman who in Seattle, part of Occupy Wall Street, 85-year-old woman, I think, 82, sprayed in the face with mace. In fact, the police officer emptied an entire can of mace into this old woman's face, and they took pictures of her and put it all over the internet. Why? Because it's emotional. Why did they put this little video out about I am Ukraine, this beautiful woman? Because it's emotional. Because it touches you. Because they know that it's going to have one of two results. It's either going to, the people who see it, it's either going to incite them to act upon what they're seeing and identify with it and say, yeah, I want that. Or it's going to turn people away and say, I know that things are bad, but we do not have to have that kind of trouble. Everybody's wondering where the police state is. Police state was supposed to have already come down. They were supposed to enact martial law already. What are they waiting for? People don't understand that they're waiting for the grand finale of the product that they're selling. They're waiting for the day after the revolution so they can install the stability operations. They do it in every country. Here in the United States, it's not going to be any different. They don't, and they can't. They cannot lock everyone down. There's 325 million people in the United States, respectively. And there's no way. even with the civilian army that they're putting together, even with the non-federalized police force, sending some of the people from the police departments all across the country to these non-federalized camps where they're being trained in military tactical operations and then sent back. And in exchange, FEMA is giving them all of those lovely gear that they've got, and the armored trucks and the LRADs, and more money for more toys that are really, really creepy and scary to us. It's for the stability operations the day after, because we're participating in a fight. We're not participating in our freedom. All across the world, they have gotten good, wonderful people who are genuinely disenfranchised, and they have every right to be, because they've been treated like dirt by their country, by the people who run it, by their leaders. Some of them elected, some of them usurped. Doesn't matter. They live under that tyranny, and it's horrible. And it's a lot worse than it is in the United States, and we're complaining. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be. But how we complain is being directed, just like it's been directed all over the globe. And it started with Optor, and it started with Democracy, From Dictatorship to Democracy, Gene Sharp's book, 198 Ways to Topple Your Government Using Nonviolent Resistance. And it has been replicated by the IRI all over the world. And it is extremely successful. Because nobody would think that it is the other guys who have set this whole thing up. Now, the Ukraine being strategic is a big deal. The port and the export of petroleum and natural gas so that they can export that to the global markets, that's a huge deal. Like I said, internationally, everybody's moving toward natural gas. Well, guess what? Russia is assumed to have the largest amount of natural resources we could dig up from the earth ever. Most of it is untapped and untouched. Now, they have the monetary backing and through that military backing of the Chinese government through their relationship with the BRICS nations. See, they've been setting this up for the last couple of years. They had their fifth summit last year. 5 years ago, China, Brazil, South Africa, Russia, and Chile got together and decided that they were going to set up their own version of a New World Order. It's slightly different than the technocratic New World Order, but it's New World Order nonetheless. You just get a little bit more freedom, get a little bit more laxed with the options you have as far as energy goes and some of the abilities that you might have. But it is absolutely New World Order. It's not pretty. I don't like it either. So you've got these two groups fighting with each other. Now, in order to take over a country in the past, they would invade. They would just get everybody together, get all their troops together, set out a plan, crack open a couple of books, get everything ready, and go over and invade. They don't do that anymore. They don't have to. Nobody has to know that there's a war going on. All they do is they go into that country with their little feelers and their little questionnaires and their little stability operations. You know, there's a group that was set up by Hillary Clinton within the State Department. And their task simply is to gather intelligence in Syria. They have been successful in helping the Syrian Free Army in destroying that country and murdering people. And they've done it through questionnaires. And they did it through interviews with local members of government and citizens. Does that sound familiar to you? It should. Because they use the same tactics over and over again.
Have you noticed that we keep falling for them? Oh, when I say we, I mean the royal we, not me and you specifically. But yeah,
no, you and I are not immune to this. They are talking about base needs. You know, I opened the broadcast by saying when I looked at that Snickers bar, my stomach growled. I didn't eat the Snickers bar. I laughed because it's so effective. Because what they talk to is not us. They talk to our emotions. And most of us don't have our emotions in check. We're reacting all over the place. We react on social media. We react to our friends. If something happens and we're having a good day, and then all of a sudden something else happens and we don't get what we want, then we start being mean to the people we were just having a good time with. And we push those people around, either physically or emotionally. Because we don't have our emotions in check. And everything we do is based on emotion. And they've got all of these wonderful drugs to take away the emotion. Remember the symptoms? You know, NyQuil, when you watch the commercial, it says that they take care of this symptom, and this symptom. They never say that they take care of the cold. Because if the symptoms go away, you think the problem is gone. It's not just that they stop reporting about something in the news. It's that everything in the news is strategic. I saw an article today in alternative media about a gentleman who made a comment that was purely designed to incite a reaction. And it was pure propaganda. And to be honest with you, I don't know why the author even wasted their time, because the journalist who wrote that article is a very, very brilliant person. I know him personally. But we don't understand what's important in our world. We don't understand that the propaganda is what feeds the machine. And every time we report on something that he said and she said, and every time we make the Republicans angry at the Democrats and the Democrats angry at the Republicans, and they're all picking on the libertarians and they're all poo-pooing on the right wings, and this tinfoil hat wearing guys aren't even paying attention in the background. They're looking up waiting for Nibiru. We're all segregated and we're all fighting each other, and we're not paying attention that we are fighting something that doesn't even exist. It is an idea of something else or someone else that is not based on reality. It's based on topical, superficial information. And because we are reacting, we know that we are under the spell of the Hegelian dialectic. So if we take a step back and take our emotions out of it and maybe sleep on it, you know, not everything has to be decided all at once. Trust me, the world's not coming to an end. They need the world to be here. They're not trying to obliterate it. They're trying to perfect it to their own liking. There's a huge difference. It's offensive to you and me because I don't like their designs. I've seen their designs and I don't like it. I don't think that my family of four would feel comfortable in an Agenda 21 shoebox that will just turn lights on and off at will because they decided that I didn't have enough credits on my card.
How exactly can we relinquish the controls of the system? And here's the real problem, is that they're using our own minds to control us. That's actually what's really frightening about it, is that they know our own minds almost as well, if not better, than we do. They know how to know what makes us tick. That's I cannot fathom a more dangerous enemy.
Yes. They know that we're upset and we want our rights back. So they come up with this scheme and say, hey, if you feel the way I do, and I'm sure that you would agree, and yes, we can all agree that things are bad. See, there's the pitch right there. There's the pitch. Why? Where's the pitch? I'll show you. If you agree to one thing, you're more likely to agree with the other things that they have to say. And the other things they have to say is what they're actually pitching you. But if you are in accord with them, then you're on that loop. Remember the infinity sign on its side? Loop you around. You agree, buy my product. You disagree, they loop you around. You agree, buy my product. They want you to do this stupid thing that has never worked. The only thing that it's done is laid a waste and a clear pathway for another country to take over. That's what these fake revolutions do. It is the blueprint every single time. It's in the history books. It's online. Go look it up. Every time they install a fake revolution, the Patsy comes in, the stability operations come in, and all of a sudden the IMF and the World Bank step in. And they fund the rehabilitation of that country. They pour billions of dollars into the infrastructure to build that country back up. Why? Because it's part of it. They figured out that they can get whatever they want. And they'll use you to get it. And it's brilliant, because how would you say no? Is anyone going to say no to a constitutional republic here in the United States? No.
Actually, currently they have kind of... No. How about Barack Obama? How about the entire Congress? How about every single senator? How about every single governor? How about every single freaking person who attends public education and doesn't think that it's BS?
You got a real good point there. I had to qualify.
I rest my case.
You're absolutely right. On the lower end, the new middle class and lower, which is all of us listening and you and me talking, we all want our rights back. The funny thing is, we never lost them. That's the brilliance. The brilliance is, we never lost them, folks. Guess what? You always had the right to hang up the phone. You always had the right to hang up the phone. And what do I mean by that? What I mean when I say you've always had the right to hang up the phone, it means you always had the right not to participate. You always had the right to say, wait a minute, I'm emotional about this, and I don't feel comfortable. Let me think about it. Let me sleep on it. Let me talk to my wife. Let me talk to my friends. It's okay to get advice. It's okay to think, because, folks, we have this idea, and I mentioned this earlier, so I'm going to bring it back up. We have this idea that consequences are bad. Consequences are not bad. In fact, Bill Gates at the World Economic Forum was setting up situations where he would have multiple consequences. Why? Because there's no such thing as bad press. That's what the Wolf of Wall Street learned. There's no such thing as bad press. That's what Bill Gates has learned. It was all over, all media. I hate to break it to you guys, but the mainstream reported on it as well. When 47,000 children died in Pakistan. Absolutely. It's a big deal. Teflon Bill Gates, he's still walking around with his hands in his pocket whistling down the street. Nobody's pointing a finger. There's no indictment. Never going to be. He can get away with it. You and I are disenfranchised. We're looking for an answer. We're looking for a solution. And we're at the point now where we'll take anything. We don't have a very high opinion of ourselves as a group. We have very, very low self-esteem. We accept very, very little. And we are simply begging for the little bit that we have. Please don't take it away. If they still have their home, please don't take my home away. If they still have their job, I hate my job. Please just don't take it away. I have a family to support. I got to have this job. When we're in that state, we don't realize that we're protesting for things that we own. We have. We never lost. Because we always had the right to hang up the phone. We always had the choice not to participate. If you don't like GMO, don't buy it. Period. If you buy it, then you don't have a problem with it. You can make any excuse that you want for why you eat it. But the fact of the matter is, if you're doing something that you know is wrong and you're doing it anyway, you're okay with it. You have accepted that that is part of that's maybe one of lesser evils that you've told yourself. You know, internet trolls are kind of funny because they are rebels. And sometimes they do really good things. I've seen people come into common threads who are called trolls, and not that they don't fit that bill, but I've seen some people come into common threads and point out really good, really logical thought process in such a short amount of words, and then get completely jumped on by everyone else in the thread. And it's kind of funny because when someone makes sense, even if they're a troll, then everyone else turns around and facilitates the other part of that conversation. See, if you're having a conversation with someone and they're complaining about something and you're telling them, oh, don't worry about it, it'll be okay. And then you stop and think about what they're saying and you start to feel how they feel. Well, yeah, maybe what just happened to us isn't okay. And so you start to complain about it. They'll pick up the other role, the one you left behind. They'll start telling you it's okay. Don't worry about it. And we see this going on back and forth in these common threads because everyone is expounding on their belief. Their belief is based on how they feel about themselves. And since we all have this problem of low self-esteem, we don't think very highly of ourselves. We've accepted less than we know is acceptable to us individually. We've accepted a smaller car or a smaller home or no vacation or buying at secondhand store. We tell people that we do it because we don't believe in planned obsolescence, but we really do it because we're broke. So we've accepted less than what we know that we're worth. And at this point, we just want what little we have. Now here comes the savior. Now here comes the group. Now here comes the wave of people who have found the answer. And you can join their group, and you too can get all the spoils of what they're about to do, except they're only discussing the incident. It's just like on the stock market. They're only going to discuss what happened today. The markets went up, the markets fell. The markets went up, the markets fell. It started up here, it ended down here. It started down here, it ended up here. They're only going to talk about an isolated incident because that's the product. You don't have to buy the Constitutional Republic. That's the third-party idea in the cloud that's sitting up above everyone that no one can attain. But it's out there. You know that it's there because people talk about it. And so what you're buying is participation in the revolution. And what comes at the day after the revolution, the stability operations. You could argue that what we're seeing with our domestic police forces is preparation for stability operations the day after the revolution. How many people are going to get killed? You know, these fake revolutions started out peaceful. In Serbia in the 1990s, it was peaceful, nonviolent resistance. Nobody died. Look at the Ukraine. Hundreds of people have died. They're getting a lot more violent. People say, well, it's because everybody's sick of it. I've got a friend who likes to use this analogy. She says, you know, if you poke someone in the chest and keep poking them and poking them and poking them, eventually they're going to grab you by the finger and demand that you stop. I said, absolutely. Because if somebody's touching a part of you that they know is sensitive and they keep poking at it and poking at it and poking at it, they're going to get you to follow whatever it is that they're saying. And how they flip that around, because you would think that that person would walk away. You'd think that that person would get away from the guy poking them in the chest all the time. Eventually it hurts. You know, they're poking the same spot for the last 10 minutes. It's starting to wear on you. It really hurts in that center of your chest. But instead of walking away from that person and getting away from the poking, we instinctually get up in that person's face and fight back. Because our person, who we are now defending our right to exist. How dare you continue to poke me in the chest? Who do you think you are? That's why shock jocks make so much money and they're so popular and it'll never end. Because they are able to do that on a daily basis to their audience. And their audience, who has such low self-esteem, instead of turning the radio off, because remember, you always had the right to hang up the phone. Instead of turning the radio off, they will listen. They will listen even harder. They'll go back and listen to recordings. They'll study their move, everything that they do, because it touches a deep part of them. And now that celebrity, that person, that shock jock is now a part of them. And in order to get rid of the shock jock, they would have to get rid of a part of them. So now they've got a symbiotic relationship going on. That's a lifetime customer. It works. That's why politicians and musicians and celebrities, they're not worried about being exposed or having a compromising photo released of them, or a very public, very destructive divorce, or any kind of scandal. There's no bad press. If people are still thinking, Miley Cyrus is making a lot of money off of what she's doing. And the reason why is because show a sign of weakness, it's part of the sales pitch. Now, some of the weaknesses that we've seen in our culture that come out are pure distractions. And we see this because they bring no effect to change. That is the defining factor of whether or not the information you have is good. Is it affecting change? Change that benefits you. Not just change arbitrarily, okay? Not like the change that Obama said when he was speaking about trying to get become a president, and he's telling everyone that change, we need change in America. That's another, an idea whose time has come. You finish the sentence for him. And so now he becomes whatever you project onto him. That's what the fake revolutions do too. It's the Delphi technique. But it's used in a way that you don't even realize you're doing it. You think that it's your idea. You agree with that. You're sitting around with your buddies telling your friends, hey, you know, we're going to have this revolution, and everything that they talk about when I'm on in the group on Facebook, or when I'm following the founders of this revolution, when I follow them around on radio and I hear them speaking and everybody in the chat room is talking, we're all in unison, we're all in accord. Now we've got groupthink. That is extremely powerful. Why? It's the same thing that happened in the caveman movie that I was talking about earlier. Whatever that guy did to ensure that he became lunch for the lizard, everyone else is not going to do. So we're going to look to the best of our group. And whoever's in our group, we're going to look at the guy who's the most successful, or the girl who's most successful, and we're going to emulate them. And so we're not doing this of our own volition, even though we think we are, because this resonates deep within us. We write to our favorite radio host or our favorite musician or our favorite television broadcaster, and we say, that thing you did, that thing you said, that music that you put out, it touched me in such a deep way. And I'm so grateful to you, and I'm going to be a loyal listener and a loyal follower from now on. That person is under a spell, and that person is giving away their power. It's absolutely a very intelligent, it's a sign of intelligence. Let me change what I'm about to say. It's a sign of intelligence that we listen to other people and we make up our own mind. But like I've been saying, it's also a sign of intelligence that we do not react to anything, because it's not that dire. Unless you're in a situation where someone's got a gun in your face and you know you've been taking karate and you know that if you just get that guy in the right position, you could drop kick him and turn that gun around on him just like you saw in the movies. Unless you're in one of those kind of situations, there's no need for theatrics. You can sit back. You can think about it. You can take a day or a week or a month. It'll be fine. When it comes to what's going on in the Ukraine, this is emotionally charged, and there is no logic or reasoning happening at all. Because if there is any logic and reasoning happening, then it wouldn't be pulled off. And it wouldn't get to the extent that it is. And it wouldn't be threatening huge superpowers and wannabe superpowers. Russia has the means, and they have untapped resources, and if they were to go ahead and develop their country, they would be unstoppable. The U.S. doesn't want that. And a lot of other countries don't want that. The EU doesn't want that either. They don't want a country that is not under their system to have that much power. So what are they doing? They're not going in and invading like they used to. They're going into the countries that are outlying areas, strategic areas where they can control import and export. And they're destroying the governments in those countries to ensure that the person who is running that little area, and it may seem insignificant to you and I, but if they are putting that much effort into it, it's important. And they make sure that their guy that they put in there is doing their job. Now, I thought it was funny that in Egypt, Mohamed Morsi was put into power, and a year later he was fired. And now he's going on trial. Because that's what it means when you get fired. When you play that sort of game, it has all kinds of consequences. See, Bill Gates wants to facilitate consequences because he knows it opens the door for more monetary opportunities. You and I stay away from consequences because our parents and everyone else around us, who had an assumed stance of authority because we believed that they were an authority, told us, don't do this or that's going to happen, don't do that or this is going to happen. So we stay away from consequences. We follow the line. Wealthy people, CEOs, they create consequences because that opens up opportunities, and then they can make more money, or they can make contacts, and it'll lead them to other people that they can create other consequences with, and on it goes. The consequence of what's going on in the Ukraine and in Venezuela right now, and what is going to be brought to a theater near you here in the United States, is the new foreign policy for the United States. And people say, well, if they're doing it over in other countries, and they're trying to gain control over those other countries, what would be the purpose of having it done domestically? The purpose of having it done domestically is that they can change the entire government structure in one shot. It's a lot easier.
Maybe, think about what you... Can I also bring an element in here? Of course, we're talking about the institution of the world government. Now, in order to have a world government, you need to have every single government in the world on side with it. Ergo, whichever government is not on side with the New World Order, I think will wind up having these little quote-unquote revolutions, won't they? They'll have all these little manipulative things, and they'll wind up having all of these dictators and whatnot put in power, who are probably just as much at the behest of the World Bank and IMF and globalist New World Order as anybody else. And it's the only way they can actually make it work is by eliminating their competition. It's like a corporate takeover.
It is. And it's fueled by this little marketing tool that they figured out a couple of decades ago. And I'm kind of downplaying it a little bit. It's been around for a while. It's that all-seeing eye in the pyramid. That is a brilliant marketing strategy. Never show weakness unless it is advantageous to your sales pitch. They put that out there. They don't give you information about what it is. And then they decide to give you a little bit of information, but it's sort of kind of like that idea whose time has come. It's sort of open-ended, and you can finish their sentence if you'd like. In fact, most people have finished their sentence. Most of the ideas that we have are not based in fact. They're based in supposition and theory. I hate to break it to you guys, but just because someone shows up at a meeting does not mean they're doing anything nefarious. It means that they have shown up at a meeting where nefarious actions are being taken place or being plotted. But there's a difference between having evidence of wrongdoing and assuming that there's wrongdoing based on association. And that's where the waters get muddied. And that's where good information gets thrown to the wayside. And that's why mainstream media has turned into disinformation and gossip columns. And unfortunately, other sources of media have taken that model and used it as well. It's a lucrative model. It is an extremely lucrative model. It makes rock stars, it makes celebrities, and it works well for everyone. And so if they give you this symbol and they put it out there, and everybody's got instances and stories and theories, and there's some truth out there. I'm not saying that Satanism and child endangerment involvement with Satanism does not happen. It absolutely does. Absolutely it does. But the answer is a lot simpler. And it's really, really easy to see. Everyone, when I started writing in alternative media, and everyone was talking about the RFID chip being implanted in your hand or in your neck or in your whatever. I thought that was ridiculous. I still do to this day. The reason why I think it's ridiculous is because as an investigative journalist, when I look and see what's actually happening with these corporations that are using RFID chip, they're doing something different. See, it's just like Catholicism. There's a version that everybody else uses, and there's a version of it that they use in Vatican City. And the guys down at the bottom who are tithing and participating in Catholicism, they don't know what's going on over there because it's a different version. It's like the mystery schools. It's a different version. What you see is one version, and it's a big distraction, and it keeps you in line, and it makes you feel certain things, and it makes you do things on impulse, and it makes you react. And that's fine, because as long as you're doing all of that, you're never going to figure out what's going on over here. While everybody is worried about getting implanted with an RFID chip, nobody's paying attention to the fact that it's in so much of our jewelry and our watches. And it's not just in your phone anymore. Google is coming out, and other companies as well. I've written about this twice in 1 week, because the trendy new RFID wearable technology jewelry, and it's out there. And people are buying it left and right. Just like they ran out and bought the Apple iPhone 5S 2 weeks after it came out that the NSA was spying on us and using trunk identifiers and metadata in order to do so. And here were these people who bought this phone and used their thumbprint or their first fingerprint or their palm as identification. Well, we know that the NSA is tapping into our phones, so you're going to hand them over your biometric data? Yes! And you're going to spend $300 in order to do it? Yes! Why? Because you're their customer. You're a lifetime customer. You might see it in the news, but it's not real. This over here is real. You know, it's sensational. It must be real. They put this video out, and then they take it away. And then some people can only find it in certain places. And you do this on purpose. It's to create scarcity. It's to create an uproar in the audience, in the customer base, that, oh my God, certain things are happening. Whether they're happening or not is inconsequential. The truth, out the window. What you believe, what you are personally invested in, that's what matters. So someone that you're listening to can tell you to your face that they're lying to you about how many bankers have died, and you won't even hear it. Because you think that they are an authority, and because you are personally invested. And so you're constantly picking and choosing information that validates your opinion, validates your belief. Because if you come into contact with information that does not validate your belief, then you have to reassess your own personal paradigm. And very few people take the time to ask themselves who they really are. You know, it reminds me of right in the middle of the never-ending story, when a character Atreyu goes to look into one of the mirrors in that blizzard and sees that he is the character, the little boy reading the story. That's his reflection. That's who he is. And he runs away screaming. It's because we have a trouble facing who we really are. Because who we really are is not what we think. We are constantly wearing a mask. We're constantly pitching ourselves to each other, validating. That's what a date is. It's a job interview. It's a begging session. Will you love me for the rest of my life? Sure. I don't know you, but I'm in love with you. That's what we see in the movies. People go through some traumatic incident, and then they're all of a sudden in love. What they don't tell you in the movies is that there's an adrenaline rush, and it's mixed with chemicals in your brain that are sexually make you sexually charged. I'll put it that way. It's not love. It's that you're really glad that you didn't die and you happen to go through it with this person. And so now you have this bond with this person. And in about 3 or 4 weeks, when they really get to know you or you really get to know them, you're going to realize that that idea that you had about that person is not who they are. And you're going to feel disenfranchised. And so you're going to break up with them or divorce them after, you know, X amount of years. You're going to go through a crisis, leave your family. Because you made a decision a long time ago that you didn't really mean, because you were under the influence of one of four things: drugs, alcohol, rage, or fear. And you were making an emotional decision about your life. And we do this with the job. We don't create the people that we want to be.
Well, to a large extent, you're right. I think that the things that happen to you actually create the person that you are. And it's kind of like your way of how to deal with it. I was talking with a couple of my friends who dropped over last night about doing this broadcast, why I do it, and that kind of thing. And am I playing the victim? And I said, well, you know what? Actually, to a degree, yes, I am a victim of the system. Okay, however, instead of doing nothing about it and just whinging about my victimhood, I use that trauma as a tool, as a motivator to go out and expose scumbaggery, right? To make sure, or at least to help in some way, any way that I can, that people who are potentially the next victims of the system perhaps won't be. And even if they do wind up becoming victims just like me, I'll show them what I have done. I've learned to cope with it, and I've learned to use that trauma as a weapon against those who would traumatize others and hopefully protect people from scumbaggery.
Well, absolutely. That book, From Dictatorship to Democracy, the book in itself, and then the 198 Ways to Topple a Government Using Nonviolent Resistance, that in itself is not a bad thing. It is a tool. Who uses it and how it's used is where the moral, ethical issue comes in. Right now, it's in the control of people who are using it for U.S. foreign policy. That's a bad thing. That means that seriously, and probably as a overall rule, be careful about where you protest. And be careful about what you join and the groups that you belong to. Make sure that you're making a conscious decision. Because if you're making an unconscious decision, you're constantly in that emotional state. And you know, because you're in that emotional state, if you take a step back and you ask yourself, why was I getting so upset? Or why was I so happy? You'll start to realize, I'm being influenced by something that constantly puts me in a state of high, intense emotion. And that is directed to a specific goal. The longer they can keep you there, the longer the length of time that they have to get from point A to point B. And there's honeypotting all over the place because they need new recruits. In order to have a full-on protest here in the United States, like they're having overseas, they're going to have to get a large number of people. And so there are people out there right now who are recruiting for this cause, telling people whatever they need to hear in order to get them to go. If they have to abuse the listener, they will. Whatever it takes, whatever base need they have to apply to their pitch to get that product sold, they will do it. And they are doing it. There's a coalescence right now, and it creeps me out. Because nobody is talking about the day after the revolution, the day that the stability operations come here.
It's funny you should mention that, because that's exactly what I was thinking over the weekend. I heard a couple of people talking about revolution, revolution. Maybe they don't realize that the word revolution means to go in a circle. Right? And you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a Gary Larson comic. Have you ever seen the Far Side series?
Yes.
Funny comics, eh? and says that you're the first guy who invented the wheel, and it's a caveman who's got a giant stone wheel, and he strapped himself to the outside of this giant stone wheel, and he's about to roll himself down a hill and crush himself over and over again. That's what revolution is, ladies and gentlemen, as the elite would want you to see it.
That is perfect. That's a perfect visual of what is going on.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to invent a new form of transport. It'll crush me as soon as I start moving, but hey.
It doesn't matter. The day after the revolution, that's not part of the product. That's why they don't talk about that.
Yeah.
That's not what you're buying. You're buying the revolution.
That's the reason why I'm always tentative about these kind of things. And in fact, I think the New World Order actually have a brilliant scheme about doing things very, very nice and slowly so that barely anybody notices the difference until one day we're all living in freedom and tyranny's been exposed totally and gotten rid of. That would be really quite nice, don't you think?
Well, that the reason why they're so patient, and we hear that all the time, the New World Order is so patient. How could people be that patient? This is...
Because they're not people, or at least not normal people.
Well, absolutely, psychopaths are not normal. Mm. There's something wrong in their brain. There's new connections that other people don't have. And they don't have empathy to worry about. So they don't care if you get hurt. It's like lightning.
They usually enjoy it.
They do.
My wife was talking yesterday. She hasn't got her car registered. So, like, if you get pulled over by a cop in this country and you don't have your car registered and you haven't paid for your fuel miles in a diesel vehicle and what have you for a van and everything, it's like a $600-$700 fine, something along those lines. And she was driving home the other day. By the way, if any listeners are listening to this and they want to donate us like $500 or something like that, so we can get her vehicle warranted and registered, so this doesn't have to happen to her again. Let me finish the story first. She was caught behind four cops, all right? Separate incidents, driving behind police officers who were going really, really slow. And she's sitting there in the car freaking out about whether or not they are going to pull her over and give her this massive fine when we can't even afford to frickin' buy food and whatnot, you know? That's the kind of stress that she was under. And she said to me, you know, if the cops had pulled her over, she would have cried and gone out of control and you know, tried to appeal to their emotions and what have you. Please, I'm in a really bad place right now. Don't give me the fine. And I said to her, if it was a psychopathic cop, he not only would have given you the fine, he probably would have enjoyed watching you cry. And he probably would have given you an even bigger fine and made something up just to make you cry even more so we can enjoy it. That's how bad these people are. And I'm not talking about like, oh, it's all cops and what have you. There are psychopaths in every type of industry that has power, okay? Cops have power, military has power, politicians have power, business people have power, lawyers, doctors, religious leaders, all of those people have power and control over others at certain points and certain people. That's what psychopaths crave. They crave suffering and power and control, you know, over other people. Of course, they don't like to suffer themselves. That's why they always, try to pursue pleasure, I think. Now, Suzanne, do you have a quick point we've got to do? We've got to take a break. In fact, we skipped the first hour break because what you were saying was just so compelling.
Well, thank you.
I'll take that as a no. You don't have anything more to say. Okay, let's go to a break.
but we'll continue on the other side.
Yeah. But before we do, I just wanted to read out one thing as well. Over the weekend, I kind of started to get pretty angry with the mainstream media and alternative media in this country. So I have declared war. Okay. Some of the mainstream media and blogosphere in this country are manipulating us and getting away with it. The few precious sources that refuse to participate in this sort of psychological warfare and scumbaggery for their personal benefit are under attack too. I will not stand for this mistreatment of the people, the truth tellers, and freedom fighters any longer. I will come to the aid of those who need their stories told if they ask for my help. This is fair warning to all mainstream and alternative media manipulators. It's war. I will take you all on single-handed if I must, to protect my people, my nation, my world, and my very soul from your influence and scumbaggery. Who has the courage to stand with me? We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 3 of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. My very special guest is Suzanne Posel, and also I wanted to reiterate and remind the listenership that this is a show funded by you, and if you want it to continue, then please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and make a donation, either a once-off or start up an automatic payment of some kind. I've been doing this for quite a number of years. With your support, ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid that more is needed. You will hear interviews on the show that you probably won't hear anywhere else, and it won't be done with the free thinking and free speaking non-interrupted structure that you should have come to enjoy thus far. In this world, there will be marketers who want your money to enrich themselves. I want your money so that I can enrich your mind, and mine, and everybody else's, so that we can be protected by the psych warfare tools and scumbaggery of the New World Order, for which we are all under the thumb currently. Please support me. I implore you. I'm doing a very, very important service for the people of this world, and if you support that, support me, and I will not let you down. Suzanne, welcome back.
Thank you.
What was it you wanted to talk about now? Something about the UN thinking that old people are a drain on the economy?
Oh, we can get into that, but I think, first off, let's talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So I found something extremely interesting. Now, okay, we all know that the bankers make money off of everything, okay? But here's how they do it. And that's what I'm interested in. That's what I was talking about before we went to the commercial break. This is how they do it. And that's important that we understand what might seem like minute details. Because if we know how they do it, then we can recognize it later on when it happens again, and we don't have to fall for it. Then we can make a conscious decision about whether or not we're going to participate in our own tyranny. So Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan Chase, and a bunch of other groups, Fannie Mae, have gotten together and extended financial kickbacks for government service. So Bank of America stuck one of their investment bankers and paid him $9 million in bonuses with $5.1 million in incentives to work for the International Trade Office of the Department of Commerce. That's a lot of money. And they're not going to just dump all of that money on something that's not going to make them a huge return. So this gentleman from Bank of America is strategically placed in the Department of Commerce so that he can affect his corporate sponsors' decisions regarding the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how it is implemented once it's agreed upon and signed. Citigroup is offering executive contracts for full-time, high-level positions with the U.S. government or regulatory body. And I think, Vinny, this is comical to me. I did not know that Citigroup had the authority to offer a civilian a part in our U.S. government or employment in a regulatory body supported by our U.S. government. That I didn't know that banks had that kind of power, but apparently they do. A gentleman from Citigroup who is a banker and current representative for the U.S. Trade Office or the U.S. Trade Commission has been given more than $4 million to join the Obama administration while receiving millions in investment funds, kickbacks for stuff that he's already invested money in. They're assuring that he's getting returns on those prior investments while handing him $4 million to sit in his chair so that he can make sure that the Trans-Pacific Partnership goes well for Citigroup. I don't know about you, Vinny, but this is...
I recall seeing an article just very recently saying that there were a bunch of bankers who were indeed given bonuses or golden handshakes or something of this nature for their support of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's not what you're talking about, though, is it?
That's part of it, absolutely. You know, we hear about that. That's something that I'd like to point out. We hear about this topical information. The bankers are receiving kickbacks or golden handshakes in order to get their agenda through. But here's exactly how they're doing it. Citigroup is talking to executives and saying, hey, look, we'll give you a contract to work for the U.S. government or a U.S. government regulatory body, and we'll go ahead and get everything started for you. All you have to do is take the position. Or Bank of America says to their top investment banker, hey, look, we'll give you $9 million plus $5.1 million in incentives, and all you have to do is take a seat at the Department of Commerce. This is how they do it. And it's important. It's just like the executive of Monsanto, Michael Taylor, now becoming the head of the FDA. It's important. That is the reality. You can talk about the suppositions and all of the theories all day long if you want. But the simple fact remains, Michael Taylor is head of the FDA. And that means everything that the FDA is doing when it comes to issues that Monsanto is concerned about, they're going to go with whatever Monsanto needs or wants, what's lucrative for Monsanto. And that's why the FDA is so screwed up. It's just like Donald Rumsfeld arguing after he worked for Searle Corporation, arguing for the approval of aspartame and getting it. It's the same deal when Donald Rumsfeld went to speak with Saddam Hussein and sold him chemical weapons of mass destruction, mustard gas. And then that mustard gas happened to magically make its way through Libya and into the hands of Assad, or allegedly. Close enough. Close enough for people to report on it and make it look that way, and close enough for people to believe it. Isn't it funny how it's always the same thing? It's the same mustard gas that's been traveling through, being used as, oh no, this government has chemical weapons of mass destruction and we have to go in there and intervene. Oh, here, I mean, I hate to beat the drum of the Ukraine again, but here, we have to have an intervention in Ukraine. Look at all these people dying. The government has to go in there and step in. So how they're putting together this Trans-Pacific Partnership is extremely important. And I know that the information is limited and there's a lot of whirling dervish kind of garbage swirling around it, and that will keep you going for years and decades. And if you get on that train and you realize that you're on that train, you can always get off. You can always get off at the next stop and get back onto the train that is actually dealing in actual reality. It is amazing to me as an investigative journalist that the facts, just like in our opinionated pieces in the news, where we can't tell the difference between opinion and fact. No one cares about what actually happens. What actually happens is really kind of boring. It's like the World Economic Forum. What happens there is absolutely, absolutely important. These are the investors and the CEOs who are getting together to fund the next 6 months to a year. All the shenanigans that come along with it and all the agendas that go along with it. All the stuff you're going to be seeing popping up. That's where all the deals are made, and that's where the money exchanges hands. It's not as sensational as Bilderberg. And it doesn't have a group of people standing outside with bullhorns yelling out. And it doesn't have Nazis. And it doesn't have a weird backstory that is just really interesting that appeals to some deep-rooted emotional part of us. It's just a bunch of CEOs getting together and making handshakes and making deals and writing checks for each other. Not really much to report on, except if you listen to what they say and you write it down, like I did in an article, and then you pay attention to what's going to happen over the next 12 months, you'll see things start to pop up. In fact, we're seeing it right now. In California, there is a state senator who is screaming for carbon taxes on gasoline because people use gasoline and it's contributing to CO2 in our atmosphere, which, according to them, is causing global warming. So if they tax at the gas pump, put the carbon tax at the gas pump, people will be less likely to use their cars. Well, that suits people like, or corporations like, I'm sorry, corporations are not people, Toyota, Nissan, Google. What these corporations have in common is that they are developing technology for driverless cars. And not somewhere in the distant future, 2015. They already have models that they've shown at car shows, and they have working models. I'm not talking about concept cars. I'm talking about actual working models. And they are working on a fleet that will be available for purchase to the customer on the production line now. Purchase for the customer in 2015. What does that mean? That means that the senator from California, who right now is laying down the foundation for establishing a carbon tax, is justifying what's going to happen next year when they start releasing these driverless cars, because it will become a moot point. You won't be driving the car. The car will be driving itself. Well, then you're going to say to me, okay, well, the gasoline is still in play. Absolutely it is. We don't have cars that are completely gasoline-free. Even the electric cars still use gasoline. But aha, they are working on that. Right now, Audi has a driverless car that is completely electric. And they're rolling that out in 2015. And they are investing millions of dollars in stations all across the country. In fact, they've been doing this for the last couple of years, building these stations where you can plug your car in and charge it and keep going. Now, the problem that they have right now is these cars are only good for 300 miles. And the distance between the charging stations is more than 300 miles. So what they've been doing is building more and more and more. And if you go on their website and you look at this electric car, you'll see that they have a map where they've been building these stations over the last couple of years. Next year, the entire continental United States is almost completely unnoticeable underneath all of these little red icons where these charging stations will be. What does that mean? That means that there's less space, there's less mileage between charging your car and having another station to charge it at. It's facilitating getting you out of control of your vehicle. And if it's not running on petrol, then they don't have to worry about you spending money on gas. Now, the good part is you wouldn't have to worry about the gas and the carbon tax on your gasoline at the pump. But if you're going for power and you're going for control, you're going to take away people's base ability to take care of themselves. In Surat, India, they have smart buildings that are so smart that they will turn off your electricity, your water, and even your ability for sewage if you owe any money. The building will shut you off if you're behind on your utilities bills or whatever the building is designed to monitor. And the whole building is computerized. And people live basically in a computer. And they are subject to the computer system. Right now, IBM and AT&T are putting together the groundwork for smart cities across the United States. And they are coming together in an initiative to design these smart cities. IBM is going to put together the servers that would be needed. AT&T is putting together the software to integrate these digital solutions into cities' infrastructure. They're saying that they need to improve urban planning and reduce costs. And they're doing that by putting everything under the control of a computer. And who owns the fiber optic cables? Because let me tell you, folks, if you start your digital communication from your phone and it has to end up to a computer screen at your friend's house, it's got to transfer somehow. And in that mix are fiber optic cables, even if it's a Wi-Fi connection. Fiber optic cables are the go-between. They control whether or not your information, your digital information, gets from point A to point B. And guess who owns those? Google. Google is buying up fiber optic cables like it's going out of style. And they're doing that because with AT&T and IBM creating the Global Solution Center all over the world, and then AT&T building the M2M foundries in Texas, where this is all going to be based, they are going to implement intelligent retail cabinets, enable targeted digital advertising, allegedly reduce energy cost and consumption, which probably means you just don't have access to it, thereby it is reducing your cost, and it does reduce your consumption.
Well, I think it's all about control. You know, again, we're talking about psychopaths. What do they all crave? Power and control. Hey, hold on a second. Aren't they capable of digitizing their power and control over other people so that you're never actually dealing with a scumbag who you can expose and maybe emotionally blackmail or fight back against or that kind of thing? It's actually just a machine doing everything to you, telling you what to say, telling you where to go, all of that kind of thing. It's like, I don't know, it's like GPS for your country. Slow turn left. Wait, isn't that towards communism? Keep going left. 200 meters. Boom!
Absolutely. Yeah. Right now in Alabama, now here in the United States since 2005, we have the Real ID Act, and that is the national RFID chip cards. And so all states are supposed to be in compliance, and there's a handful that isn't. The list of compliant states is much longer, and that's what disturbs me. Alabama just came out with their STAR ID, which is their response to the Real ID Act. And it has a computer chip in the driver's license or state ID that's issued. And they're doing this because they want to improve the integrity and security of state-issued driver's licenses and identification cards, which in turn, of course, Vinny, helps fight terrorism.
Yeah, what's the definition of terrorism again? Where's my dictionary? Oh, here we are. It's a system of government that terrorizes its citizens into doing what the government wants. That makes a hell of a lot more sense all of a sudden, doesn't it?
It really does. There was a study that was done late last year, and I reported on this. During the Boston bombing and the 2 weeks after, these scientists got together, the University of New York, I believe it was, and studied all of the coverage of it over all media and sent out questionnaires to the audience members asking them how they feel about it. And what they deduced was people who watched the coverage were more psychologically affected than the people who were actually at the incident, at the bombing, and may have even gotten hurt. So just by watching, just by hearing about, just by the coverage in media, the saturation, you are more likely to be affected psychologically by an incident than if you were there. What does that mean? That means that they don't have to actually do anything. They just have to threaten it. And just by threatening it, you are sucked in and affected psychologically. And at that point, you're a lifetime customer. If they give you a solution, you're going to do it. If they say, hey, we need RFID chips in driver's licenses and state IDs to protect you from terrorism, remember what happened in the Boston bombing? You don't want that again, do you? Does that sound familiar, folks? Because most parents should be shaking their heads. That's the same tactics that you use with children. You're going to clean up this room or you're not going to that sleepover. It's the same tactic. You don't have to actually follow through with your threat if you have conditioned your child to be affected by the threat itself. And what the media is doing in conjunction with the powers that be, and it's not just government, it's also corporations and CEOs and all those other fun guys that we love so much. And they are giving you a scenario and terrorizing you with it. So if they want to protect us against terrorism, then they should just leave us alone. But they've got us RFID chipped. They've got us wearing the RFID chips. And since I'm talking about it, I want to go into an article, one of the articles at least that I wrote about it. It's trendy jewelry, okay? It's in cuff bracelets. A cufflink is a company that is designing both male and female bracelets, chains, necklaces. They're all with computerized components that use Bluetooth technology to connect the jewelry to your smartphone and then to wherever else it needs to go. They don't need to inject it into you. You're going to buy it and you're going to wear it because it's going to be cool. And it's going to monitor your heart rate like all these smartwatches. And it's going to take care of you and make you feel better. And it's going to tell your doctor what's wrong with you so your doctor can better take care of you. And this is all for your own good. And don't you feel safer, Vinny, knowing that not just your government, but your clothing and your accessories love you and take such good care of you?
I don't know about that.
it's like, who do I want to take care of me for my entire life? You know, there's a reason why I don't live with my mother anymore. Because I can take care of my frickin' self. What's everybody else's excuse? Eh? Why are they looking for the government to save them? Why are they looking for somebody else to come and solve all their problems and run their frickin' lives and what have you? Have you not moved out of your mother's house yet, bro? Come on! Am I right?
Suzanne? I believe so. You know, if you're still living in your parents' basement, there's a problem. I can't help you, and I don't even know how to begin, but maybe there's a counselor or a friend that you can talk to motivate you. But this goes back to what I was saying before. We have such low self-esteem. We don't believe that we are worth what we think we are. And when we're in the crowd and when we're in the group and we're having a rah-rah session, we feel that emotion and we get all pumped up. But when it comes down to it, when we're at the store and we're deciding whether or not we want to buy processed food or natural food, we pick up the processed food and put it in our cart. So what we think and what we do and what we say obviously don't correlate. But we know that. We live with ourselves. When we're in the group and we're having a rah-rah session, we can tell those people whatever we want. And they'll believe us because nobody ever questions authority. You ever notice that, Vinny? Nobody questions authority of any level?
I wouldn't say nobody, but the vast majority certainly don't.
And if they do question authority, they have to...
The authority comes down on them like a ton of frickin' bricks, and then it applies negative association with resisting authority, and so they stop doing it, and then the authority winds up in control of everything that they do, including what they think and what they say.
Absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely. So you have Cufflink you can buy, and if you've got a Bluetooth, you can wear it, and it'll talk to your smartphone. It's wearable health and biometric devices. It's small wireless computers in your appliances. It's stylish bowl-shaped mobile phone chargers. I mean, this stuff looks really good. When you go and look at this on a search engine and put it in the images, and you'll see this stuff looks great. I think it looks cool, but am I going to buy it? No. I know what it's capable of. These smartwatches are equipped with geofencing, which alerts parents to children who have walked off. And the reason why they have this apparatus, this little device, is because a child got out of, he was a special needs, I believe he was autistic, and he got out of his school. He walked right out of the classroom, down the hall, and somebody at the school had left a back door open, which one of those doors, one of those big doors that if you had opened it, the alarm would have gotten off. But because it was already open, the alarm didn't go off, and the kid got out, and he was abducted, and he was subsequently murdered. So because of this, they are now pushing for these geofencing smartwatches so your child can be low-jacked and geolocated just like your parents, just like grandma who's got Alzheimer's, who wanders off. We got to get her wearing her bracelet so that we can geolocate her and make sure she's okay. And the unfortunate thing is, this little boy is dead. That really did happen. He's dead. And unfortunately, the powers that be take this horrible incident and twist it into the nanny state. So now everybody, it's just like if you have more than one kid. I remember I have a younger brother. And if neither of us wanted to own up to why the vase was broken, well, we both got in trouble. And sometimes my mother would say, well, I don't know. I didn't see who did it, so I'm going to punish both of you, and you guys work it out amongst yourselves. If either of you want to come clean and be honest, then I'll end the joint punishment and only punish the one. And they do this tactic in the military, too, in boot camp. They'll punish the entire troop because they want no one to have loyalty to anyone but the apparatus. They'll even turn in a troop amongst themselves because it facilitates the need of the military more than the need of the individual. And if you are going to become assimilated into something else, you have to become a new person with new thoughts and new feelings. And there cannot be any individuality left in you. So because this poor child died, now we have to lowjack all of our children. We have to make them wear bracelets. They've got Microsoft. You're going to love this one, Vinny. Microsoft designed a smart bra that will monitor women's health by tracking their heart rate, their emotional state, and monitor how much they eat. And the bra will send signals to the woman's smartphone. And so the smartphone will caution them if they're making a bad food choice. Can you believe this one?
That reminds me of, what was it? There was a high school in the United States that banned children from having packed lunches.
Yes. Because the parents don't know what the kids need. You know, the school does. You know, Michelle Obama put out an initiative with her Let's Move campaign. And in all of these public schools, she's concerned about caloric intake. And what she proposed and what some schools implemented, and thank God these students were smart enough to protest because they won their stance. These are children, okay? Their bodies are growing. They need food. They go through growth spurts where they eat a lot of food. They go through growth spurts where they crave certain foods. Why? Because their body needs it. It's like when I was pregnant with my children, I wanted certain, I had certain cravings. I didn't have like the pickles and ice cream craving or anything weird, but I would really want to eat asparagus, or I would really want to eat a salad, or I'd really I ate grapes every single day with my daughter. I don't know what it was, red grapes every single day with my daughter. Now, she happens to really like red grapes, so maybe there's a correlation there. But there's something in the nutrients that my body wanted, and so if I give it to my body, it goes to my daughter, and everybody's happy. When the children are in school all day and they need brain power, and they're doing physical education, they need more food. Obama, Michelle Obama's answer to that is to cut the caloric intake, cut the portion size, and give the kids half of what recommended dosage for calories per day during school hours, which means you're going to have kids who don't have the ability to pay attention. They're lethargic. They fall asleep. They're irritable. Well, if you're just going on symptoms, like most of the medical community does, then you're going to start recommending that this child be put on a mood stabilizer, when really the child's hungry. Most of us don't realize that we are dehydrated. And if you, as a rule of thumb, when you're hungry, get out a glass, a full glass, fill it up halfway at least, and drink a glass of water. If you're still hungry, then eat. Most of the time when you're hungry, you're actually thirsty. You're dehydrated. These children cannot be asked to make important decisions like paying attention to their education, even if it is Common Core, even if it is screwed up. They're not even paying attention to that. They can't because they're hungry. This is how they are changing the way that our entire world is structured. And it sort of kind of makes sense if you think about it. Kellogg's and a bunch of other groups, food processing corporations came out and supported Michelle Obama. And they said, hey, we're going to cut the caloric intake in our food by 75%. Now, that sounds great because they're processed foods. It's GMO. It's corn syrup. If it's cutting calories, that's wonderful, isn't it? I mean, that's why we gain weight, right? Never mind the studies that show that all of the chemicals screw around with our metabolism, and that's what causes us to gain weight.
Well, and also on top of that, you have all the artificial sweeteners and whatnot, which mimic the sweetness of sugar. And when your mouth tastes the flavor of sugar, it actually begins to crave the energy that is usually contained within it. So what you'll find is people who are eating fat-free, sugar-free kind of stuff, you'll find that they start eating a hell of a lot more than they normally should, because their body is absolutely calling out for that sugar and energy that it was manipulated into thinking it was getting in the first place.
Yes, it's a neurotoxin. Absolutely. To elaborate on what you said, you drink some Diet Coke and the aspartame starts sparkling in your brain and setting off all of these firings. It's an electrical, it's like a fireworks show in your brain. And your brain says, oh, wow, this is really good food. Your stomach says, I don't have anything. I just have this liquid. The brain says, no, there's food. I see it. Because your brain works on glucose, sugar. Okay? Your brain says, no, it's here. The stomach says, no, it's not. The brain says, okay, we'll keep consuming. We'll consume until we actually have something that you can break down and use in the rest of the body. And that's why they overeat. And now what it translates to on the topical surface in the person's mind is, hey, I just had a Diet Coke. I can go ahead and have 4 or 10 pieces of pizza because I just had a Diet Coke. I can have the fast food because I just drank a Diet Coke. It'll offset. No, it won't offset. It is a restructuring of our neural net and our biological chemical makeup that is creating false identifiers in our body. And when our body doesn't see what it needs, it'll either start eating itself, which is called starvation, or, and by the way, that's the theory behind lap band surgery and gastric bypass surgery. that your body has accumulated all of the all of this fat and stored it. And so if you starve the body at a certain point that is not allegedly detrimental, then your body will start to eat itself and you'll lose the weight. Well, I've had a friend just 2 years ago die from lap band surgery. She had a potassium deficiency because after the surgery, it screwed up her chemical makeup so much, having this reworking in her body, that she couldn't process food and she died of a potassium deficiency. And literally, she wasted away to nothing, and one day she took a nap and never woke up, and she was 26 years old. She lost the weight. She was very, very light when she died. But unfortunately, she's not here, and she was a wonderful person. And she's not here anymore because of all the garbage that they put in our food that screwed up with her brain, because of all of the imaging that we put out there in the media that told her that she had to look a certain way, otherwise she was worthless. And she bought every single idea, every product that they put in front of her. She bought it, and it killed her at 26 years old. And that is what we have to look forward to. If you're lucky and you live a little bit longer, great. But that's what they're aiming for. They're going to get you on the way in because they're going to sell you the GMO and the processed food and all the chemicals in it. And they're going to get you on the way out because they're going to sell you the chemotherapy and all of the pharmaceutical drugs that are just eating away at your pocketbook while you're slowly dying, taking care of symptoms while the actual problem is killing you.
And they actually can make quite a lot of money off of killing you while making you think that they're solving a problem, can't they? I think it's kind of like the same philosophy behind chemotherapy. Hey, how many people survive chemotherapy? Like 3%. Are you telling me that it actually kills 97% of the people you give it to? Who said that? The Australian Medical Association studies? I mean... But how come you're still giving it to everybody after you know that it kills 97% of people? Well, because we're owned by the Rockefellers and we get like about $50,000 of everybody's taxpayer money on the socialist healthcare system in order to profit the Rockefellers and kill the person that's getting the treatment. Oh, okay. Well, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. You know, I'll shut up now.
Well, researchers came out this past week and they did a study. I always love these studies. They said that the chemicals that have been identified in food and packaging and processing are not harmful to humans, and that claim is causing concern, undue concern, in the general public. And the toxins that they were talking about were formaldehyde, bisphenol A, phthalates, and two words that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. But let me tell you what this stuff does. And they say that we're exaggerating, okay? People like you and I, we're exaggerating. These chemicals are okay, except they caused harmful effects in cumulative exposure. That means a little bit over time, builds and builds and builds. You ever notice the cancer, all of a sudden, you've got tumors? Nobody noticed when you were developing the tumors because they don't pay attention to that. All of a sudden, you've got tumors. The cancer didn't just come out of nowhere. It's just nobody's paying attention to the problem. They're masking the symptoms. They're giving you things that take away the symptoms so you don't notice that you're dying of cancer. So BPA has been shown through studies and linked to disorders and diseases, including breast cancer, prostate cancer, infertility, early puberty, neurological disorders, and immune system compromises. That answers a lot of questions when it comes to disease, BPA. Phthalates, which are a banned toxin in the United States, it is a cause of major diseases and conditions, and it can be found in shampoo, hairspray, soap, detergents, raincoats, perfumes, plastic products, even building materials, even your vinyl flooring and your feet. Your feet are extremely porous. So you're walking around barefoot on your floor. You have no idea that it's leaching into your body and it's killing you. according to the National Cancer Institute, formaldehyde is a known carcinogen. And it is present in pressed wood products, cigarette smoke, and fuel-burning substances. Previous studies have shown that formaldehyde, whether it's long-term or high exposure, causes leukemia, lymphatic cancer, blood and bone marrow diseases, and brain cancer. And this is in our food. This is in our packaging. This is in the processing of the food that we're eating.
We have a toxic food supply, toxic air supply. The land's starting to get toxic itself, you know, the chemtrail aluminium contamination and what have you. Now, it occurs to me that if you've got an incredibly toxic environment, what's going to happen to people's minds? The people who live within that environment, well, they'll become pretty frickin' toxic as well, won't they? What about their bodies? Well, that will become pretty frickin' toxic as well. What about the politics that rule all the nation and what have you? Same thing, isn't it? How do you get rid of toxicity? By limiting your exposure to contamination. I think that's about as good as you can get, which if anybody's anywhere near Fukushima, it might be a good idea to get the hell out of there. The other element here as well is, what are you actually willing to give up? You know, I mean, what will it take you to understand this concept? And what if I told you that in order to understand how toxic things are, everything, including yourself, it will destroy most of the things you enjoy in your life in order to do so. What then? Would you still wish to understand? Would you still wish to comprehend? Many will not. And it will only be the strongest and the most courageous of us that will.
Those of us who are not buying the products anymore, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier in the broadcast. Those of us who recognize the marketing and we're not buying the product, whether it is a physical object or an idea or a concept or a philosophy, whatever, a person, if we're not buying the product anymore, then we are able to make conscious decisions. We are not reacting to the world around us. We are acting upon the information that we have. We are able to discern. We are able to logically think, regardless of the chemicals that are impeding that ability. Because we are consciously taking a step back and saying, that makes me feel a certain way. Why does it make me feel that way? Is it its intention to make me feel that way? And what would the consequence of my actions be if I choose to go along with this agenda? See, this is critical thinking. And this will save us from everything that's going on around us. It's real simple, folks. It's not complicated. It does require your effort. It does require your participation and taking care of responsibility for what you do and how you participate. And then it all starts to fall apart. If we're going to take the idea that they've given us of the pyramid, then it is obvious that you and I are at the bottom of the pyramid. So unless they're using anti-gravity technology, the pyramid is going to fall if the bottom pieces or the bottom bricks come out. Now, nothing that we've done so far is effectual, except small pockets of groups of people who have decided that they are not going to participate in the tyranny. Let me give you an example. A 15-year-old girl drinking her Gatorade realizes that there's flame retardant in her Gatorade. She says to her mother, "Oh my God, mommy, did you know that there is flame retardant in my Gatorade?" Mom says, "I didn't know. I'm so sorry I gave that to you." She says, "That's not enough, mom. Even though I understand that you didn't know, everyone should know." She wrote to Pepsi. They basically gave her a snub. So the 15-year-old girl went online and started a petition and had 150 signatures. And then she took that back to Pepsi and said, "I've got 150 people who are willing to boycott you. Take it out." And guess what? They're taking it out. Now, some people will say, well, that's not enough because, you know, they're phasing it out and it's going to take some time and they're taking the scenic route to it. Okay. What are you doing that's effectual? What are you doing that's actually affecting change? Because a 15-year-old who didn't like what was happening to her and didn't like the fact that her mother, who loves her so much, was duped into giving her poison, went and got other people who feel the same way and got them to sign off and agree that this has to stop. And because of that initiative, it is now stopping. The March Against Monsanto is effective in awareness. We need to know that this stuff is there, because otherwise we won't think back. It's like the parabens in your shampoo and conditioner and most of your toiletries. All of those scrubbing microbe beads that are in your body wash and your facial wash, that's where the parabens are. Did you know that when they biopsy tumors in breasts, and also there's a high incident of breast cancer in males? So folks, male or female, pay attention. It's 99% paraben when they do the biopsy. Obviously, nobody's going to think back when their daughter comes to them at 42 years old and says, Mom, I have breast cancer. The mother is not going to go back and think about all those times that she washed her daughter's hair in Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo. That's what caused the parabens to leach into her daughter's body and kill and potentially kill her and cause her to go through unnecessary surgery, unnecessary because it never should have happened, because the chemicals should have never been in the Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo. It never needed to occur. But because Johnson & Johnson is also a pharmaceutical company, they're making money off of both sides of it. They put the chemical in, and you think, Johnson & Johnson, no more tears. I love my daughter. I'm going to wash her hair with this. It's going to help her. Meanwhile, at 42, she's going to tell you that she has breast cancer. And people don't put two and two together, because it happened. I mean, there's a lot of years between 6 and 42. So people forget. They don't realize that the food that you're eating is causing the cumulative damage that will then manifest into something really, really scary after 20, 30 years of consuming this. And that is the reason why you're dying. It's not because you didn't take care of yourself. You didn't know any better. You thought you were. It's the chemicals that they're putting in the food, the all natural. This is marketing. Food that is healthy for you does not come in a package. Ooh. And it doesn't come with a commercial either.
Yeah, yeah. And wasn't there just a Monsanto wants to label its GMO foods as natural or something like that? Did you hear about that?
I wrote an article about the labeling situation. The corporations want to get together and write their own rules for labeling. And so they are pressuring the FDA, which, you know, that's all smoke and mirrors. They want to write the rules that the FDA is going to use. And it's a voluntary mandate, which is an oxymoron in itself, because you can't mandate something if it's voluntary. This means, and did you know that because of the way that the rules and regulations are written even now, that there's stuff in your food that doesn't make it on the backside of the label because it's not part of the things that they have to label? So seriously, folks, God only knows what's in your food. You don't have the whole story just because you turned around and read the back of the label and you saw some words that you can't pronounce. There's more in there that they don't even have to divulge. Good food comes from your local farmer. Good food comes from your local rancher.
Yeah.
Get to know these people. Good food comes from your farmer's market. And please, for the love of God, folks, farmer's markets are a trendy way for the city to make money. Don't force your farmer to waste his money paying for a slot at the farmer's market just so he can sell you products for less money than it took for him to produce so that he could possibly stay in business. Buy a CSA box, Community Supported Agriculture. You might have to shell out $200 or $300 or $400 up front. And hey, look, gathering up that much money right now, I know it's difficult. It's difficult for all of us. But throughout the year, you're going to give that farmer an influx of money that's going to help him pay his bills throughout the year. And then every week or every 2 weeks or however the agreement is, you're going to get a box of fresh food. And some of these community supported agriculture boxes is not just the farmers. When you think of farmers, you think of fruits and vegetables. It's also the ranchers. You might get some milk and cheese and meats, breads, and other maybe even some organically processed canned goods like jelly and processed salsa. I've seen that in the box as well. This is a great way that you can take all of that money that you would be spending at the grocery stores and the big box stores and just collect it all up. It's wintertime. Collect it all up. And if you can't afford it, when the spring comes and the early summer and they start opening the farmers markets, go down there and see if you can sign up for a CSA box and get that food for the rest of the season. It's worth it. Because you know what's in that food. You can go to the farmer and talk to him. I mean, I've done this several times. I used to work on an organic farm. I knew a lot of farmers back then, but I still do this. When we moved out to Port Orchard, we were lucky. There's a lot of dairy farmers and there's a lot of local butchers and farmers that grow fruits and vegetables. You go out there and you'd be amazed, folks. If you go out there for a Saturday afternoon and you say, hey, if I help you guys work the field for a little bit and you can teach my children how to grow food and what's the best way to use organic means of pesticides, using neem or using beneficial bugs. And give your kids a little bit of an education and a little bit of self-esteem by teaching them how to be self-sustaining. And then on top of it, at the end of the day, you're more likely to get a box of fruits and vegetables to take home with you as a thank you. Why? Because we're taking care of each other. We're showing each other that we care about what goes into our food. And you can get to know the farmer. You can ask them questions about how they take care of, if it's a rancher, how they take care of their animals, how they take care of their chickens, how the farmer tills the soil. And you get a complete education here while getting good food, while supporting your local farmer, while making sure that the big agra doesn't get a hold of that one guy. See, if we focus in on these small guys in our local community and keep them in business, you know what that means? That means that more and more small guys are in business. And less small guys are going out of business. That means that more of the small guys can end up going back into business. So again, if you don't participate in the tyranny by not falling for the marketing, if you make a conscious decision instead of reacting and participating in the Hegelian dialectic, you can make informed decisions that will actually change to our benefit, not theirs, but actually affect change in our world. It's a choice. We've got time. In fact, we've got an infinite amount of time because the best part about this idea is it can start at any moment. It doesn't have to wait till Monday morning. You don't have to say, you know, I'm going to lose weight next summer or whatever. You can do this right now. Yeah. You can make a conscious decision right now.
I recall I spoke at the David Icke conference when he came to New Zealand. And that's something I said to the crowd. If you haven't, you know, activated yourself, if you haven't gone out there and started to expose scumbaggery on your own yet and what have you, I can assure you that as soon as you start doing it, as soon as you make that decision to do it, it's the perfect time for you.
It builds your self-esteem. It reminds you that you always had that control that you thought somebody else had. And that you don't need to protest, because protesting is begging for something that you already have because you think that other guy's got it. You always had the right to hang up the phone. If you don't remember everything that I've said in the 3 hours, remember certain things. There's a slogan for every marketing product or product that's being marketed. An idea whose time has come. You always had the right to hang up the phone. You do not have to participate in anything. And I don't care what the other guy says. And that includes an argument. You know, we live on social media. It's unfortunate because 90% of our communication is body language. And we've stopped, we put a blanket or a brick wall over our ability to properly communicate with each other. But when we can't physically see each other, immediately look for tonality. And we look to see what the tone is. So we listen to the voice. You're listening to my voice right now. And you're hearing that throughout this entire broadcast, I have been giving you information, behind the scenes information, that will help you actually affect real change, that will help you shift from being under the spell of the marketing and the Hegelian dialectic that's happening in big ways and in very, very small ways. And if you try anything that I've said throughout this broadcast, just try it. What are you going to lose? You could gain your self-esteem back and be able to stand up for yourself and stop participating in the global tyranny. Or you can go as business as usual because, hey, it feeds into that part of you that is disenfranchised. And as long as you're complaining about the problem, the people who are creating the problem can continue to create it. And the people who are making money off of the complaining about the problem can continue to do so as well. And so the cycle of marketing and advertising and in marketing and investing is complete.
It's like the emperor, you know?
Strike me down with it. And your journey towards the dark side will be complete.
Absolutely. It is. And it's so, so simple. Like little phrases like they do it in plain sight. They do it in plain sight. They do it right in front of you.
Like 9/11.
Yes, they do.
They not only did it in plain sight, but they actually used planes to do it, which I thought was quite amusing. Okay, well. Suzanne, we're almost at the end of the broadcast. Have you got any points you'd like to wrap up and what have you before we close off the show for today?
Support Vinny's show. Support real independent media. I appreciate everyone who agrees with me and has decided to contribute to the U.S. Independent, that there must be at least one place. And I'm not saying I'm the only one. But there needs to be an independent, integral, journalistic media house that is interested in presenting information that keeps the audience informed, keeps them from reacting, so that we can effect real change in our world. And Vinny is a part of that. And what Vinny does independently is tremendous. And what he contributes to the USI, I am absolutely grateful for. And Dr. Rima Libo and my good friend Thomas Sheridan and Dane Wigington and Charlotte Iserby and Kevin Galali, these people know what they're talking about. And they have decided that they are not going to participate in the tyranny anymore. They don't fall for the marketing. And in my opinion, those people are 10 steps ahead. And so if you want to be where they are, a free independent thinker who is actually affecting change and working toward the goal of restoring our sovereignty, not just domestically here in the United States, but all over the world, make sure that the Ukrainian people actually get what they really want, which is their own sovereignty and their right to it. Please support the people on the U.S. Independent. They have their own websites. They have their own stuff that's going on. Go to see them. Support their sponsors. Support Vinny's sponsors, because this is the only way. When the media implodes, and we're watching many, many facets of media implode as we speak, the best part about that is the people who are actually integral and are doing honest journalistic work will still be around when all the smoke clears. Let's help each other now.
Yeah, I completely agree. Help me, ladies and gentlemen. and help all the people that are actually exposing a bit of scumbaggery, because Lord knows the mainstream media ain't going to do it for you, and nor are your government's going to do it for you. You know, it's all very well to complain about something, but I'll tell you what. Do something better than just complain. Be part of the frickin' solution. Thank you very much for listening. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com for this show and many other archives and whatnot as well. And of course, please set up an automatic payment of only just a few dollars a month to keep financing this little operation, by which we can actually contribute to the solution, and you can be part of it. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Suzanne, at theusindependent.com. And we will see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, assuredly.